Yale Committee to order a copy of the Open Meeting Act, Nebraska Revised Statute 84-1407 through 84-1414, is posted on the back wall of the meeting room. Prior to turning to the agenda for tonight's meeting, I'd like to announce that the procedure that will be used for this meeting with respect to each agenda item, the directors will first hear staff proposals and recommendations. Then the public will be given an opportunity to speak to an item. And by will, in the FBO committee, limits public speaking to 3 minutes. Lastly, the directors will discuss the item and take action, and we ask the public not to interrupt the directors' discussion and action. Thank you. With that, roll call.
Bradley.
Here.
John Conley.
Here.
Thompson.
Here.
Weiss.
Here.
Shepherds.
Here. Move for adoption of the agenda?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Thank you. Roll call.
John Conley.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Weiss.
Yes.
Bradley.
Yes.
Shepherds.
Yes. I have before me proof of publication of the meeting notice. Moving on to item 6, review and recommendation of refinancing of flood protection and water quality enhancement bonds, Series 2013. John Winkler and Paul Gringer, D.A. Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll let Paul come up and he can explain the details. We do have some bonds that are eligible for refinancing, and working with Mr. Greger, he will kind of give you the timeline too. We've looked at them for a while. We really didn't have a good deal until now. So, but I'll let Paul fill you in, and then we can discuss details later.
Great, thank you. Again, Paul Greger with D.A. Davidson. I guess the district issued about $55 million in over two sales back in 2013. And when we came to you in 2015 to refinance the 2010 bonds, which I think saved in excess of $400,000 at that time, we were also looking at the existing 2013 bonds. And at that time, it did not make financial sense to refinance those bonds. It would have cost the district money. So we analyzed it and moved on. And as we continue to do periodic updates and analyze those outstanding bonds for savings, we started to see some traction here at the beginning of the year, and we saw it trending in a positive way. Mr. Winkler and I met a couple weeks ago and talked about it, and Tyler Mullen with Baird Holm was able to quickly put together some bond documents, and since that time we've seen the markets cooperate a little bit further. So we're now projecting in excess of $1 million worth of savings, assuming everything comes together. We intend to meet with the rating agency, Standard & Poor's, over a conference call on the 25th, and they've indicated that they think they can have the rating turned around to us, the bond rating, which is what we use to sell the bonds, which is AA-, by the way. So we're hoping that the rating agency will affirm that rating on the 28th. And if all that comes together, we're going to schedule a marketing period that first week of May. We think it's going to be May 3rd. And then we would have everything closed and wrapped up on June 15th is our tentative plan, which is a slightly accelerated from the draft timeline that was presented to you in your materials. We were anticipating a marketing time of May 10th, but if Standard & Poor's can do what they said that they think they can do, we're going to try to save a week of market risk and hit the market at a good time. If anybody has any questions on the financing, I'd be happy to answer them, or any legal questions. So Tyler's here for that.
Go ahead.
What's the rate at right now? And what are you looking at getting it to?
Yeah, good question. So on the bonds that we're proposing to refinance, you're currently paying 4.3%. We think that number is going to come in the mid threes, around 3.5 or so.
Mid threes?
Mid threes, yes, sir.
Is there a cost on that?
Their financing cost?
Yeah.
Yes, there's underwriting expense and legal expense.
Okay. And is that very minimal compared to what the cost of? Because you're looking at about, round numbers, 8 points. And sometimes that works off the percentage. So sometimes by the time you get done paying your fees and paying everything else, you're not actually getting what you think you're going to get.
Absolutely.
So that's why I'm just curious if it's something that it's going to be pretty much just straight through?
It's all netted. The net savings numbers that we show you will be net of all the expenses. Okay. Yeah, we won't show you savings and then deduct our professional fees from
you. You were talking about what's your rating on that bond right now?
Standard & Poor's put a AA- rating on it, which is a high investment grade rating, and we're hoping to get that again this round.
That's what you're trying to get to, or is that
AA-? Yeah, that they go AAA is their highest rating category,
right.
And then AA+, AA, AA-,
right.
And then we go down into the A scales, and then then it becomes closer to non-investment grade. But AA- is a very solid rating, and that's where you're currently at. We don't think there's a reason that they would change that. I'm not expecting an upgrade or a downgrade. I'm expecting them to affirm the AA-, but I'm not an analyst, so I can't really speak to that. When we do have our conference call with them, there'll be two analysts on the call that will ask the district a series of questions. It'll be about an hour-long conversation. And then from there, they will go back and they will meet with the committee, which is made up of other analysts, their peers that cover similar credits throughout the country. And they'll have a meeting kind of like this, actually. There'll be several analysts up there, and the two lead analysts on your credit will present to their peers. And then there'll be a roll call vote, and the majority wins. That's how it goes.
And talking to them last time, we would have got AA+ or AAA, but just like personal credit, we didn't have enough debt or debt history. So that kept it at AA-.
So,
okay.
Can we get a motion on the floor, please?
I move staff recommendation. Second.
Thank you.
Online and
is there any discussion from the general public? Staff? Any further questions of directors? Seeing none, roll call.
Thompson?
Yes.
Weiss?
Yes.
Bradley?
Yes.
Montgomery?
Yes.
Jefferson?
Yes.
And as a reminder, on Thursday, we'll need 8 yes votes for this to proceed per the state statute on the bonding authority.
Correct.
Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it.
Thanks, everyone. Have a great night.
Moving on to item 7, review and recommendation of transfer of funds from account 0104505-4410, Pigeon Creek Special Watershed, to account 0104507-4195. The CAP program. Terry, good evening.
Good evening, everyone. I guess it's with somewhat a sense of accomplishment or whatever you want to call it to bring this to the board tonight, especially after John Winkler and I attended a basin meeting with the state conservationists of NRCS and the Lower Elkhorn NRD and the Lewis and Clark NRD at West Point last week. And one of the discussions was about getting people to do conservation work. In other NRDs, it seems to be a huge challenge. So the topic was brought up about sending staff to sales training so they could actually be out selling this conservation because they're having a hard time spending their dollars, the local NRD dollars, the EQIP dollars, and their NSWCP dollars. And we're not having that problem here in Apapio. So that's why I'm bringing this to you tonight. You know, it's due to a number of factors that we spent all the money, in particular the heavy rain event on August 23rd, 2016. And I can remember that night standing on the bridge south of Kennard with Marlin and the USGS guys, and one of my thoughts was we didn't budget enough CAP funds for this year because I knew the damage that was going on because that burst of rain that we had there in the heart of Washington County really did a lot of destruction. So anyway, that brings us here tonight. To date, we've spent about $563,000 of our budget has actually been paid out. We've got another 165 and change that we've made approvals. So that already puts us over of our budget of 700,000. And we've still got a fair number of landowners that are interested in completing some work this spring. Mother Nature's going to be a big dictator in how much we get done because the window's closing because the planters are starting to roll. But we also have applications for tree planting, grass seedings that have not been approved, and these total about $168,000. So I'd like to transfer the funds from the special Pitch and Jones Special Creek Watershed account. There's $118,000 remaining in there and change that is due to we did not get PJ 10 completed due to design issues and 404 issues, but we fully expect to complete that in FY 18. So due to all these factors, it's the staff's request that we transfer $118,000 from account 01. Well, I won't read it all, but between the two accounts, and then we increase the maximum not to exceed amount to $888,000 for the CAP account 01-04-505 or 507-4195. With that, I'll answer any questions.
Can we get a motion on the floor, please?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you, John. Does anybody from the general public wish to make a comment? Staff? Directors? Director Thompson?
$118,000 you want to transfer. What happens next year when that project that you're taking it from needs it? You know, just increase the budget for next year?
Well, we'll have to budget for it in the FY 2018 budget.
And then in the past, we've never really spent more than $700,000 in that account. Am I correct? Kind of wavered around that number.
Last year was $635,000, I think. In previous years, we could have spent more. The need was there, but it was just kind of thought that maybe the atmosphere wasn't quite correct to asked to transfer the funds.
So you stated that we're already going to blow the $700,000. We're going to increase with the $500,000, $563,000 plus the $165,000. Then you want $118,000 on top of that, or with that
on top of that.
On top of that. So, just an exceptional year. Is that how you want to sum it up?
Well, you know, Jim, it wasn't that many years ago. We budgeted $1 million or $1.2 million. In the CAP budget. And then it went kind of down to 800,000. And then about 2 or 3 years ago, it went to seven. And like I say, last year we didn't spend the 700,000. So I didn't request more funds. Now I can tell you in FY 2018, we're probably going to request more, or at least I am. Now, you know, what staff and the GM comes up with and presents a budget to the board may be, you know, whatever number that makes sense to everyone. Because one of the big things that, and I don't know if Neil Jensen will talk a little bit about this, but the NRCS is going to start looking at their compliance issues a little bit different than they have in the past, because the state of Nebraska has basically been told by OIG that they need to enforce ephemeral erosion in these fields. And in the past, if people were no-tilling, even if they had this ephemeral erosion, they were considered in compliance. Now they're going to not be considered in compliance. So their campaign is fix it, don't disc it, sort of thing. So the thought process is that's going to create a higher demand for cost share, which I'm challenging them, well, let's see more EQIP dollars. Let's see them federal dollars in. But it'll come back to the local dollars, and what the board decides to do with that. I mean, it's
a little bit of this program, too, is kind of while the getting's good, do the projects with the demands high, sometimes because of weather or whatever. The demand is low and we haven't had the applications, but now we're getting them. So,
and that rain event, it impacted a pretty good sized area. And even the terraces they had that were older, they were kind of obliterated. I mean, that was a nasty rainstorm. So.
Any other questions, Director?
Why is this thing, why is it becoming such a overgrown problem all of a sudden? You're talking about spending more money every year on this. Is there a reason why that we're having to spend more money?
Well, like I say, years ago we used to budget like $1.2 million.
Mm-hmm.
We've sold conservation. I mean, that's really, at a field office level, that's the biggest job we have is, I mean, whether it's terraces or dams or waterways or seedings or tree plantings, you know, I challenge my staff to sell these practices. And like I mentioned, the other NRDs, they're struggling to get any landowners to do anything. So I know we got to be conscious of tax dollars, but I view this as a good problem to have as a natural resource professional.
Will the feds kind of come in and help us with this a little bit, maybe?
We do get EQIP dollars, which is Environmental Quality Incentive Program. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've been able to spend those dollars and get as many as we can. That's a federal program. There are federal contracts. So we count on NRCS to get those dollars in the contract. And we challenge them to get more dollars because, you know, potentially their fiscal year runs from October 1 to September 30th, so it's a little bit different. We're constantly saying, hey, you know, can we get a few more contracts, you know, another $100,000? Because that absolutely helps our local dollars go further. And that, you know, but, you know, you can only do so much in that regard.
Right. And I think Terry was mentioning it was a major event, that August 23rd rain. I live right in the middle of that area, and we had 7 or 8 inches of rain in a hurry.
Wow.
And it just blew out terraces for miles and miles around. And there was a lot of sediment, a lot of erosion that just washed right down the Papio Creek. And we'd like to stop that again, too. And I think it's a good program to do that. And so it's an unusual factor that we're dealing with here, but yet it's a great program at the same time. The more we can encourage farmers to participate in this, I think it's to the benefit of everybody involved.
If you look, also the part of your information is the cap needs that Terry put together, and you can see it. It's throughout the entire district. It's just not in Washington County or one county. It's spread out throughout the entire area.
Two questions, Terry. One, what is the cost share percentage on CAP, or does it vary?
It's 75%.
75%. And are there any federal funds that come in to help support us in making that match?
On EQIP contracts, they cost share 50%, and then we put another 40% on top of that. So that's,
EQIP, they get 90%
that's right.
Recovery. That's pretty good.
Because we want to incentivize EQIP. Otherwise, there's no incentive for people. Because it's kind of it can be an arduous process. It takes some time. I mean, if you need Dunn's numbers, Sam's numbers, for some guys, they say, I don't want to mess with it. You know, we've always gotten our EQIP allocation into contracts and spent. And that's, you know, other NRDs aren't able to do that. But part of it is because of our incentive is, you know.
And that's what we told the NRCS is when you can't spend money, send it our way.
Exactly.
At the federal level and at the state level.
Yeah.
We have the system in place that we can spend that money. Just give it to us. And that's a message we put out to everybody. So,
further questions or directors? Seeing none, roll call.
Weiss.
Yes.
Bradley.
Yes.
Don Conley.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
And
yes. That concludes our agenda. We are adjourned.
I'm going to call in to order the Programs, Projects, and Operations Subcommittee for today, April 11th, 2017. You heard Director Teaser announce a procedure for the FEL Subcommittee. That will apply to this subcommittee. Also, moving on now to quorum call, please.
Leahy?
Here.
Teaser?
Yes.
Yeah.
Thompson? Here.
Here. Next item is the adoption.
Here.
Okay. Now we're ready for item 4, the adoption of the agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Brad Conley?
Aye.
Leahy?
Yes.
Caesar?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Yes. I have here a proof of publication of tonight's meeting notice. That'll become part of the permanent records of tonight's committee meetings. Now we're moving ahead to item six, is a review and recommendation on amendment to Zirinsky Basin number 2 professional service contract with HDR Engineering, Inc. Amanda Grant, please.
Good evening.
And John Engel, it looks like.
John Engel with
HDR. Good evening.
Can we go to the map first? Thank you. So last month, we gave everyone an update on the Zirinsky Basin 2 project. We finished, wrapped up preliminary design. And if you remember, we were talking about this water quality basin that protects Zirinsky Lake. It's Basin 2, but it's actually the last of the four proposed basins to go in as part of a 1999 community-based watershed plan to protect Zirinsky Lake. So last month we talked about the details of the design and wrapped that up. And so this month we're asking you to consider an amendment to HDR's professional services contract that includes phase 2 and phase 3. Phase 2 is the final design and construction documents, and then phase 3 is the construction administration. We sometimes do those separately, but in this case we're going to hopefully move into construction this fall, so it'll be a pretty quick turnaround, so we included those together. The summary, quick summary of the major activities are project management, and this is part of the final design, finalizing the general site civil design, structural design for the spillway structure, and then putting together the contract documents, specifications, and the bid package to get that out to bid, along with any survey and the final right-of-way needs that we have. And then the construction administration phase is really where we have a project representative on site for full time during the construction of the project, and that includes progress meetings, you know, as-builts, quantities, all of those things. And so the original contract was $470,200, but there's a credit for about a little over $49,000 that you'll see in the amendment, and that was due to a couple of items that were not, they were scoped but not needed, and that was one of those was we thought we were going to try to put together a water sustainability fund application for this project. And in the end, we decided to be happy with what we got for 6 and 7 and not put an application together. And then there was just some other, we do hourly not to exceed contracts. So there was just some other scoped items that didn't go to their maximum amount. So that was deducted. So for those phase 2 and 3 items, we're looking at an amendment of a not to exceed amount of $858,930, but because of that subtraction for phase 1 items that we didn't need to do, the maximum net contract is just over $1.2 million, and those numbers are up on the screen. So John and I could answer any questions that you might have about the scope. For the schedule, we're looking at the 404 permits in. That's a big task to get in. We're waiting on some comments, and we'll get that squared away. We'd like to begin construction, go out to bid late summer, begin construction this fall, probably about a year construction time frame. So,
the chair would entertain a motion on this item.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
We have a second. Anyone in the public wish to speak? Seeing none, directors? Questions or comments? We're not going to let you off that easy. Seeing no questions or comments, do you want to add anything, Mr. Winkler?
No.
Okay. Roll call on the motion, please.
Caesar?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Brad
Conley?
Aye. Leahy?
Yes.
Yeah. And Chairman?
Yes. Thank you. I'll enjoy the rest of your evening.
Thank you.
Moving on now to item 7, is review and recommendation on Erickson Construction Company change order for Washington County Rural Water Lakeland Extension. Zach Nelson, please. Good evening, Zach.
Good evening. So for those of you who don't know me, my name is Zach Nelson. I've been with the district now 4 years here in April. Prior to that, as a subcontract manager with Kiewit. So my role here at the district is I oversee the district's rural water systems. We have one in Dakota County, one in Thurston County, and then one in Washington County that was originally comprised of two rural water systems. Bill, you want to scroll to the next to the map? Next one. Okay. And then zoom out a little bit. So for almost the better part of 20 years, the district has received phone calls, comments from people living in the Lakeland Estates area. It is a subdivision or comprised of multiple subdivisions in central Washington County that's served by the Lakeland Estates Water Company. There's roughly 525 households within Lakeland Estates Water Company service area. Last summer, we were able to come to an agreement with Lakeland Estates Water Company to extend a water main to serve them as a wholesale customer. And as a wholesale customer, essentially, we just have a large main that stops right outside their development, has a master meter pit vault, and that's the point of connection. From that point, they're responsible for billing their own customers and any kind of maintenance. This particular project was lucrative to the district because what we're selling the water to Lakeland Estates Water Company is roughly double the cost that we're buying it from the city of Blair. So it's substantially beneficial to the rural water system. So in order to make this project happen, we applied for an SRF loan. It was a lengthy process. It was approved. And as a part of that, we had to refinance the system's existing debt, which was a tremendous benefit, and that helped save money. However, when the project documents were drafted for this project, it was on the basis that the contract would be awarded in August. The contractor could get their work completed in the fall and be out of the way of Hawkins and their Highway 133 widening work. However, at the August board meeting, there was not a supermajority, so we were unable to approve all of the financing. As a result, the project didn't get awarded for another month, which then compressed the job site as well as kind of the schedule or window of opportunity to get the work in. So originally, Erickson Construction from Blair was awarded a contract for $226,362. Here's the point of connection was up around County Road 34. It bore under the county road, go through right of way, and then get into this heavily congested area where there's Sydney Lane, multiple different driveways, and then a point of connection at Todd Drive, and another extension, another driveway in the way. With just that 1 month delay, Hawkins had begun work in this area and the installation of a new frontage road. So as a result, in many areas, instead of using a full-size excavator, Erickson had to use a mini backhoe, which has a bucket size, you know, a fraction the size of a full-size excavator. So other multiple delays that we saw, the county is eventually going to lower a section of County Road 34. As a result, then, we requested that Erickson bore the main under County Road 34 deeper, as well as in order to stay ahead of Hawkins, instead of laying straight through this area, they had to go lay two sticks of pipe under each driveway, jump to the next driveway, lay another two sticks of pipe, and kind of keep moving down the line from there. So it increased fitting costs as well as just a massive productivity loss. Luckily, the project, we were able to get everything installed and water turned on roughly the second week of January. Startup went extremely well, and water's been flowing without a problem since then. And then since January, we've been going through labor records, field notes, material invoices with Erickson to evaluate the impacts to their ultimately their base bid since the drastic or since the scope of work had drastically changed in that. Instead of laying pipe in a rural type setting, it was like the equivalent of laying pipe in an urban setting, what you would see with like what MUD deals with. So after all of the negotiations on change orders, we came to a round number of $80,000, $286.10. That was made up of a number of different things, which I've outlined in the memo of a service line, which the district is getting has been reimbursed by the SID. as well as some additional scope changes that we had as far as replacing flush hydrants with full-size fire hydrants so we could get better flushing, as well as then the project delays and additional cost to remove one driveway that was up here north by Sydney Lane. So what I'm coming forth tonight is requesting permission and that the staff recommend that the subcommittee recommend to the board that the general manager be authorized to execute a change order with Erickson Construction for the construction of the Washington County Rural Water Lakeland Connection Project in the amount of $80,286.10.
Okay, Chair, to entertain a motion on this item.
Move staff recommendations.
Thank you. Is there a second? Is there a second, please?
We'll second.
We have a second. Anyone in the public wish to speak to this item? Seeing the director, it's your questions. Director Weiss, did you have a question?
Yeah. You said there were delays. Why were there delays? What caused the delays?
The delays, so kind of starting off, the first was there are multiple instances where Hawkins was working in an area where Erickson, we were ready to go, and we had pieces of equipment waiting there for hours, sometimes days on end. That was the first. Delays as far as then productivity and looking at just even we would go out there and we'd watch them in the field using when they're in areas where you could use a full-size excavator versus a mini excavator. You know, when you have a piece of equipment that's a fraction of the size, you just can't lay pipe as fast.
So was it the contractors? Problem because he didn't have the right equipment on the job? Or?
No, it was simply from at the time when we had the initial site showing, put together bid documents, it was like looking at it, here's an open, well, it wasn't an open field, but here's an open area where you're unobstructed, bring your big piece of equipment through here, blow and go. To then by the time, because we had the delay in the award, once they got there, instead of having it open right away, there was a road, a frontage road right there, and you couldn't get a big piece of equipment in there. So in some areas, for instance, where the frontage road ends and you have enough room to the adjacent property owner's fence, that width was cut down to like 12 feet. I mean,
but it says here there was a delay of the awarding of the construction contract. Mm-hmm. What was that?
There was not enough board members present to provide 8 votes mm-hmm. for the refinance. So we couldn't award the contract until we had the financing in place, and part of the financing was reevaluation of the bonds or refunding of the bonds.
So basically,
it was our fault.
Erickson had to hold up because they couldn't get started. So in other words, Hawkins started, so that kind of threw everything.
That is correct.
Over. Yes, yep.
It's an incredibly congested area. I drive by there every day, and it's just a mess. So,
and we see it in other projects. Where you look at a unit rate of what you'd expect someone to install pipe in an open field versus what they'd install pipe in an urban setting, it's literally like 4 times the cost.
Did you have a question, Director Bradley?
No, I guess it was sort of answered as by it reach a super majority.
Yeah, it was absence is not just, we didn't, there was not enough people to physically vote.
Didn't know also with the Hawkins, are they understanding, or are they just really going to blow through and do their thing, and the Department of Roads wouldn't try to hold them back at all?
Politically, I'm not sure I want to answer that question, but I actually knew the superintendent from college. It was one of those things. They have their critical paths, and when you have a paving machine that's costing them, you know, probably $10,000-$15,000 a day, they have their priorities. We had ours, and unfortunately, we couldn't work it out in the sandbox. I guess the silver lining in all of this is, too, when we went and prepared the documents for the SRF loan, we built in contingencies. We built in additional field observation engineering costs. So overall, the net overage on the project is pretty minimal. And like I discussed, it's pretty lucrative. The quicker we get the water on, the quicker we're receiving revenue on the project.
Rest assured that this amount we settled on was not what they asked for. It was significantly higher. Yeah. Zach did a good job of going through all their information, all their pay schedules, all their materials, and getting a number that we're very comfortable with. So,
Zach, would you comment on the approximate net income you expect to get off of Lakeland annually?
So the gross revenue is around, for round number's sake, $125,000. When you factor in our water costs from the city of Blair, it's about $50,000. Then the bonds or debt service for the project is about $25,000. So it's about $50,000 net income. There's virtually no operating costs because it's fed by a water tower. So,
thank you. Jim Thompson, thank you.
So in their justification, you talked about the as-built drawings did not properly identify the water main. And we put that in, I don't know, how many years ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain at that time, and we can pick on Dick Sweeney if we want, he's not here, but the as-built drawings, perhaps a general for the new board members as well, or on air. Any of our as-builts, was it a small section that just...
That was of the total kind of change order, that's a pretty small section. That probably equated to about a day and a half's worth of time potholing around. And some of that comes from, it's a 12-inch main, and you tell them, don't break that, you know, hand dig it if you have to find it. So when you're talking a matter of being off by, you know, 5 feet, I mean, that takes a long time to get to if you're... going about it gingerly.
In general, when these jobs are done, we're getting the as-built, we retain them here.
Correct. We're even sending our own staff out to get GPS coordinates on it. So it's a lot more accurate now.
Thank you.
Question, is your accuracy on depth, though, is as you record it today? It's not accurate once the county changes a grade or something like that. How do you keep upgrading your as-builts to take into account the changes the county makes?
As far as for depth, a lot of it has to come from, you know, on our locate machine, you can actually tell the depth on it. It'll say what it is. So for instance, if we know in a certain area that, you know, it's our water main's 7 feet deep and we know the county is going to take off, you know, 2 feet in a certain location, we know we're good. We try to note as many areas where we think we could have pinch points, I guess, or could run into that issue.
Thank you. Any questions or comments further? Yes, Director Patrick.
You know, when these accounts over 110% come, they're always a punch in the gut, but I think this one, maybe it's because it's 35% over, is a little bit more concerning than most. And I just need some more information before I vote for it, because my initial thought is to approve a change order, maybe just to our original estimated total project cost of $490,000. So I'm going to pass tonight, maybe on Thursday, depending on what the information that comes back between now and then. Maybe you still propose that, because I would like to know what they did ask for to get us to settle still at what I think is a pretty high number at this $80,286. And I'd also like to, I don't know if we keep on file the other bids that we got. Mm-hmm. That, you know, maybe those other folks sort of saw, planned and projected ahead, hey, these are some of the issues that we're going to have to deal with. They included those into their costs, and this firm said, you know, we can just bid it at this, because everyone knows our policy. And we see a lot of firms coming to us, you know, 110% above or whatever. So, I mean, those are just some questions that I have, because... Like Director Jeb said, I mean, everyone knows that area is congested with a lot of construction stuff. So, I mean, it seems like there was some aspect of poor planning on their part. So I don't mind a change order, but maybe just to our estimated total project costs. And then I take a look at, I don't know if we put this together or they did, but you have the descriptions and the dollar amounts broken up. For some things, pretty like add extensions to fire hydrants, replace flush hydrants, pretty itemized, and then get to the last one. And then project schedule delay and increased scope of work, 57,000. Parentheses includes a whole bunch of stuff. It just seems very ambiguous, if you will, on that 57,000. And I don't know what productivity loss looks like and how you create a cost for that per se. So I'm gonna vote no today, but hopefully we can get some more information between tonight and Thursday.
We can give you more detailed analysis of how, I mean, it's very detailed of how these numbers came up and the conversation with the contractor. There's no way possible that any contractor could have anticipated that the project, that we would not have had 8 votes to initiate a contract, and then in fact that Hawkins would actually start the highway project. That's impossible. I didn't even know we weren't going to have 8 votes till that night, and so there's no way another vendor knew that. I mean, if they did, they're in the wrong business. We can get you more detailed numbers of how we came up with the number that we are very comfortable with, that they actually incurred those costs. But there's no way that they could have anticipated it, or when they originally bid it. They originally bid it into the scope, into the environment that was presented to them, and they did a walkthrough, and each contractor bid it according to that environment, and then the environment was changed.
Just real quick, so we accepted their bid before August, before we approved the money for it. Typically, don't we approve the money for it and then we accept the bid?
We were supposed to accept the bid the same time that we had the financing.
So, yeah, so then the but motion got...
Yes, go ahead.
The motion got changed that they were awarded the contract subject to
financing.
Getting approval of financing, which ended up, it was somewhat of a formality. We just needed the vote. The majority vote. I guess to your initial comment about kind of foreseeing that this was potentially going to be an issue, I've been on the other side of things working for Kiewit on a lot larger scale, multi-million-dollar projects. And something like this wasn't simply this is the way the project documents are written. I think if we say that we bid it this way, we can weasel our way. I've been on that side of the fence before. Something like this, I mean, it would be having a conversation, with Hawkins and them, and literally 2 days later, the job site had changed drastically from then. So it was kind of an ongoing, luckily the contract has a mechanism in place when you run into issues like this, it's done essentially on a time and material basis. So what that $57,000, we have records of, day one, they had a, cat whatever loader out there. This is what the unit rate is on this. This is their superintendent's labor rate, some whatever dollars an hour. Every single line item broken out, and then here's their markup, profit, and overhead, and that's how we got to that number. So I think there's probably 50 pages worth of information to get to those numbers.
So how much did they originally ask for?
$129,000.
Mm-hmm.
And then do we keep the old bids on record? I mean, is there a way to take a look and see how far they were compared to the other ones?
Mm-hmm.
They're only going to tell us what they would have bid at that particular point in time. We wouldn't tell us what they would have ultimately been paid if they would have been awarded the job. So, and the reason I think one of the reasons we accepted the bid contingent on financing is the bid's only good for 30 days.
For 30 days.
So if we would not have accepted the bid, then we would have been rebidding once the financing was in place, and then those numbers could have been whatever.
And taking the gamble, too, that Hawkins isn't going to get their work done. I mean, you have that externality of you don't know how quickly they're going to get their stuff done where we could have bid them. I mean, it literally came down to probably a matter of weeks where we could have gotten in there ahead of them. So I'm comfortable in saying that if we were to bid out the project, knowing exactly where they were at in place, it would have cost well over $300,000. And now if we were to bid out the project now, it'd probably be over $330,000 because we'd have to cut through every driveway. It's just bad timing. We just couldn't get in there ahead of time.
I'd like to point out, and you correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Winkler, that the ratepayers who we represent today will be the ultimate bearers of the cost for this, not the NRD itself. We're doing this on behalf of the rural water system. We need to be their good stewards, and I think we have been.
Mm-hmm.
But we have enough revenue coming in from this project to, over a short period of time to cover the overage here. And I think we should move ahead, and we can't go back and second guess what happened. It was done in good faith. We moved ahead. The contractor moved ahead, and I think we need to pay them.
The repairs are responsible for all of the debts of the district, of the rural water district. So no tax money is ever commingled or can support the rural water system. They're self-supporting.
and it ended up working out too, just where we had other cost savings in engineering, field inspections, is then just not in other contingency built into it. So the total project cost is pretty much in line with what we had anticipated when we went and got financing for the project. And essentially the revenue we receive, it pays for the expenses incurred.
Any other comments? Seeing none, roll call on the motion, please.
Yes.
Craig Conley.
Aye.
Lady.
I'm going to abstain.
Caesar.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, Jazak, you've got the next item here is review and recommendation on bids for the Little Papio Channel, Maple to Pratt Street. This is a Keystone Trail stabilization project. Go ahead, please.
Okay, so the district maintains the Little Papio Channel that was originally constructed by the Corps of Engineers in the 1960s. Erosion and sloughing along the Keystone Trail is an ongoing issue that district maintenance staff deals with continuously. The erosion from runoff can cause damage to the banks, cause destabilization, as well as undermine the Keystone Trail, which then creates a safety and maintenance issue. Attached to the map here, Maple Street is down here to the south, and then Pratt Street to the north. You know, I scroll back up just a little bit, Bill. Here's the Design Plastics building, and there's a certain area here where runoff is running across the trail and scouring the bank, which is similar to what we see in a lot of other areas along the trail. So the district retained Lamprey Nearson to evaluate the issue and perform a topographic survey and come up with a engineered design and cost estimate for the work. The design calls for installing a storm sewer inlet on the east side of the trail, capturing the runoff, and then going under the trail with a culvert and then discharging into the creek at a safe elevation. The engineer's original estimate to perform the repairs was $83,675. Bids were opened on March 30th. A total of six bids were received, ranging from $43,704 to $69,040. Bayshore Construction's bid of $43,704 is the apparent low bid. Staff and Lamprey Nearson has reviewed all of the bids and has made a recommendation to award the contract to Bayshore Construction. What we're seeing is the market now has turned to, I guess, a lot of companies, a lot of smaller companies are kind of expanding, and there's just a lot more people bidding this kind of work than what there was probably a year or two ago. So the market's gotten a lot more competitive. Lamprey Nearson said they've seen this on a number of their other projects here lately. So it's actually kind of good for a change. It's kind of turned around a little bit in our favor last year.
Thank you, Zach. Chair would entertain a motion on this item.
Can I comment on that particular issue?
Not yet, please. Right. In a minute, you can, sir.
I'd like to move staff recommendation.
Okay. Did I hear a second?
Yeah.
Thank you. Anyone in the public wish to speak? This is your turn, sir.
All right.
Come up to the microphone, if you would, and give us your name and address, please.
My name is John David Redding, resident at 16404 Springfield Road. It seems to me that the issue at hand could actually is due to the large roofs. On the map, you'll see businesses with fairly substantial size to the roofing. The rainwater, well, simply put, as it rains, the water will go down the gutter, and that would potentially create erosion of the ground surface. What could possibly fix the issue? What could definitely fix the issue? Not possibly, definitely and very easily fix the issue would be a way to collect the rainwater from the roofs, and it necessarily wouldn't have to be into a storm drain or over the dirt, eroding the trail, and other land material nearby. Just rainwater collection into a large barrel. Could also be used, you know, for purposes inside of the building, such as toilets, sinks, et cetera, et cetera.
Thank you for your comments on that. These buildings are large, and when we get a rain event, that's a lot. That's a lot of water. It's there'd be a lot of rain barrels.
The cost of rain barrels, if you get a PVC barrel, or say I could weld up a stainless steel barrel for fairly low cost, would be much less than the issue of digging into the ground extensively to try to improve the sewer system. This is how I feel about the particular issue.
Thank you for your comments tonight.
Thank you.
Zach, do you have anything more that you want to add to this now?
Well, I guess to touch on that gentleman's comment, I mean, Lori, does the city of Omaha have for new construction, new developments, have certain controls in place to capture runoff and temporarily store it on site? In a situation like this, the picture really doesn't even do justice with how congested this workspace is in here as far as it's not really feasible to put a detention basin or anything. We pretty much got to put it in the creek. Just because there's no room where for how massive of an area that is.
There's room for an extensively large sewer system, whereas you cannot have a large facility. I don't get what you're saying. I don't care about my mind.
Zach, are the businesses, major businesses along the creek there, do they have the roof drains tied into a collection system that goes into the creek?
As of right now, a lot of their gutter systems discharge into what appear to be a swale that just gets inundated with water and then overtops the swale and is washing over the trail.
Thank you. Did we get a motion on the floor on this? Second. Any other comments, please, from the public? The directors? Director Bradley.
Now, you said from Maple to Pratt, and what's the other cross streets?
Trying to even think. Maple's down here. I think that's Keystone Drive. Yeah, it's Keystone Drive that runs right in front of Design Plastics.
Right. At 100 something or?
A little bit further east.
Yeah,
further
east.
90th.
Okay. So.
That's pretty commercialized in there.
Okay. Any other questions or comments?
Yeah.
Roll call on the motion, please.
Thompson?
Yes.
Greg Conley?
Aye.
Lady?
Yes.
Caesar?
Yes.
Jefferson?
Yes.
Washington has 10. 9.
Thank you. Okay, now moving to agenda item 9 is review and recommendation on the contract with Santec Consulting for Papio Hydraulic Modeling. Lori, please.
Good evening. So if you'll remember, a couple of months ago, we had a presentation from Fire Engineering. The district and FEMA have been working on redoing the flood maps in the Papio Basin for quite some time. Short history of that. Originally, the Corps of Engineers was set to provide all of the data for the remapping. They did the hydrology that was completed in 2010 that showed very large increases in the floodplain at that time. And then we ran into some issues with their funding, and they never were able to complete the hydraulic model. Last year, FEMA, through their contractor, completed the hydraulic model based on that hydrology provided by the Corps of Engineers. Since that time, National Weather Service and NOAA issued new rainfall data. We felt that it was prudent to look at that before publishing these new flood maps with these large increases. The new hydrology study that FIRA completed did show much less of an increase. There are still some increases throughout the watershed, but they also looked at putting in the new reservoirs that the district has been constructing to show the additional flood control on the maps. Because of the timing of the FEMA mapping project and then FIRA's hydrology, we are in a situation now. FEMA has agreed to accept the new hydrology, but we need to redo the hydraulics. So we are proposing to use Stantec Engineering, who is FEMA's contractor that did the previous modeling, to update the hydraulic models and put it in the format required by FEMA to be put on flood maps. The total cost to redo the entire watershed model is $429,681.81. And we are under a little bit of a timeline. FEMA anticipates starting production of the new flood maps in October of this year. So we feel that Stantec would be the best choice, as, since they've just recently completed that model. They can do it again. They can do it again quickly and still meet that FEMA schedule and not hold up the mapping process. So we are asking for a waiver of the district's policy on professional services. With that, I can answer any questions. I do also have Stantec's project manager, Jason Schneider, is here tonight too, if there are any questions directly related to the contract.
Lori, would you expand a little bit the benefits to the district of having the updated maps?
The current, I believe the modeling on the Big Papio and Little Papio was completed sometime in the late 1980s. So obviously, there's been a lot of changes in the watershed since then. We have, you know, almost 30 years more data to provide as well. So having accurate flood maps, one, helps in making sure that people who need flood insurance are covered, and people that maybe don't need it based on refined data aren't paying more than they need to into the system.
Thank you. So, John, do you want to
add? Yeah, I mean, it's roughly the difference between about 3,000 structures, and that's residential and commercial. So you're looking anywhere from probably $12 to $15 million a year in just saved premiums for those folks that either don't need flood insurance or have reduced rates because of the accurate data. So that's huge. That's like several Facebook data centers to get that type of economic impact into a community. So those people will be spending that money on cars, furniture, things like that in the local economy instead of sending it to Washington, D.C. for flood insurance. The other issue is, too, is just the valuation. Typically, property in floodplains are 4% to 8% undervalued compared to similar property not in the floodplain. So you take those folks out. Obviously, those valuations go up, and local entities of government, their assessed valuation increases. That reduces the property taxes for everybody because they have a higher assessed value. So those are just the minute things that you're talking about, a huge difference. Plus, it's accurate. We're providing accurate maps for not only our planning but for the citizens that we serve, and they're not being burdened by paying for flood insurance or having these restrictions on development and building their businesses or homes that they don't need to be. If there's a fire in the floodplain and you lose over 50% of the value of that structure, you're out. You can't rebuild. And that would probably cost, so if you have a big fire in downtown Papillion, good luck, you're done. So those are all that's huge. And I think Tim Fowler had it, it's the grail of what we're supposed to be doing.
Yeah,
we're using updated information, we're taking credit for the reservoirs we built. The goal was to not have the floodplain expand. That was the goal when we started. Now we're actually seeing it decrease. So that's game changing, and what a huge boost to the community, and everybody that's had to pay flood insurance since the 1980s or 90s or wherever they're done. This has been a how long year process? 15 years?
2003 it started. So
15 years. Yeah. People have been paying flood insurance for 15 years. Some $5,000 a year. And so not to have that burden, that's what I would advocate for.
And the cost to accomplish these savings is less than $500,000.
Yeah, it would be less than $1 million.
Director, chat, please.
Yeah, when fire engineering completed the study, you were mentioning it, they were taking into consideration reservoirs, new ones and proposed. proposed ones, do you know which reservoirs they were taking into consideration? Some that haven't even been built yet, or current ones?
So it would be WP5 Prairie Queen, which was completed a few years ago. Mm-hmm. Damsite 15A, which is currently under construction. And I believe WP6 and 7, which are slated for construction, I believe, starting this fall, or hopefully. They will. So those four reservoirs.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Do we have a motion on the floor on this?
No.
Let's get a motion on the floor, and then we'll continue discussion.
Move staff recommendation.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Anyone in the public wish to speak to this? Seeing none, Director, it's your turn again. Back to you. Director Leahy, go ahead.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with what John's saying, so I'm not going to get in the way of this, but excuse me, if I heard this right, it means over $400,000 for formatting?
No, for the hydraulic modeling.
For the hydraulic
actually
modeling.
Performing the, having to rerun all of the hydraulic models with the new data from fire engineering, that's the lion's share of the cost.
All right. FIRA doesn't do that?
And
that wasn't part of what we were getting when we paid FIRA?
No. So there's two different models that goes into it. There's the hydrology, which is the amount of rain that falls, and then there's the hydraulics, which is the actual mechanics of the water flowing through the stream.
Yep.
FIRA could do the hydraulic modeling part. There's a certain amount that we would still have to contract with Stantec to do. But FIRA also did not build these models. So it would take them a little bit more time to get up to speed to start figuring out all the intricacies.
Any more?
Director Bradley.
Yes, I was just want to caution trying to put out there that we can deliver more than we can. Just even a concerned citizen pointed out about impervious cover. And if since 1980 or 2003, and then the Great Recession, and then we came out, and even more development is what I'm saying. When you have increased impervious cover in the urban area, you will have an increase in overbank flow. So there will be some folks that may not have to pay flood insurance, but with this modeling, there may be somebody that will, mm-hmm. and they weren't expecting it. So mm-hmm. that just don't put all that out there thinking it's a holy grail. So caution that, you know, in a sense.
Thank you. Director Fowler, did you have your hand up?
The term was used called the truth. And data is truth. And we owe the truth to our constituents. That's kind of what I meant by that. Question on the October deadline. Is that a end of October? And is that a hard deadline? Do we have a little maneuverability? Because I live in the modeling sim world, and sometimes that's a big juggernaut to get all put together.
Right. Jason, I'm going to ask you that question.
I'll talk to you a little bit about that. It is, so starting November 1st is currently when FEMA has contracted us to begin the mapping part of this project.
Could you identify yourself?
Yeah, sorry. I am Jason Snyder with Stantec Consulting. So FEMA has contracted with us to do the mapping, and that's scheduled to start on November 1st. So if the modeling does take us a little longer than expected, it could be something we could make up and isn't going to affect the overall project per se, because FEMA is aware that, you know, that we would be doing the hydraulic modeling and that, you know, that we are ultimately responsible also for the end maps too.
Okay.
Just did curious on that.
Yes, it did.
I'd like to expand on your comments, what extent are you modeling in addition to the area we're discussing right now?
For like this area?
Yes.
I guess we're modeling everything that's currently mapped in Douglas and Sarpy counties. And then we're also mapping a little bit along the Platte River between Sarpy and Cass, so we can establish a new elevation there for future levy certification for the district.
It's a very extensive modeling then.
It is.
Thank you. Director Thompson.
Thank you, and you answered this question. Answered part of mine, but just for my benefit, FIRA came up with the completed study. This portion of it would have to be completed anyway by a consultant. Okay, Stantec I'm looking here. Where the heck are you? I've never heard of you. Sorry. Your proposal doesn't identify anything where the heck you are.
I'm out of Overland Park, Kansas.
Okay.
And our office is based there because that's where FEMA Region 7's office is.
Okay.
Stantec currently holds mapping contracts with Iowa, Kansas, and we also hold one with the Nebraska DNR to do this very same type of work.
And the recommendation is to waive our requirements, go through the interviews and all that, which I don't have a problem with, but as far as responsibility, highlight where you've been as a firm, and you've got some contracts, but
right,
how long have you been in business, for example?
We've been in business since the 1960s.
Okay.
We're currently 20,000 people, and out of that, over 16,000 are in North America. We've got another 4,000 globally, but you know, we've been a FEMA contractor now for the past 9 years, and then we missed out a year in between there, but then we were previously for another 10 before that.
And I see your proposal, the breakdown of costs, and I'm going to assume, and you can reinforce that when you dealt with the government, you had to submit significant costs and pricing data and so on. Is that carried through here for this proposal?
Yes, it would be. You guys have to enter into an agreement with FEMA, and then what we've proposed is we will provide you everything you need to meet your agreement with FEMA then in the end.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Seeing none, roll call on the motion, please.
Brett Conley?
Aye.
Leahy?
Yes.
Teaser?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
And Chairperson?
Yes. Thank you. Now we're moving on to item 10. Laurie Laster again has review and recommendation on the second amendment addendum to the City of Omaha interlocal agreement for Papio Watershed Dam Site 15A. Go ahead, Laurie.
Well, can you go to the map? one more. So this is another one of those projects that's been in the works for a very long time. Dam Site 15A, we started the preliminary design in 2009, and like we were just discussing, at the height of the Great Recession, nobody knew that development would be occurring this far out in West Omaha at that time. So when we started planning for access to the site, we knew that eventually someday HWS Cleveland Boulevard would be on the eastern edge of our site. And this is that proposed road right there. We didn't know if that was 10 years out, 20 years out, 5 years out. So we had proposed a temporary road that does not meet city standards, basically just a slab of concrete at grade to get people to the boat ramp until such time as the full urban road was built. So we designed it that way. We started construction that way, and then along comes the developer to the east that would be required to build HWS Cleveland Boulevard. And so working with the City of Omaha, we've been partnered with them all along, they have decided, well, let me back up just a little bit. This development, right now titled Pier 15, will be done in two phases. Bill, can you scroll down just a little bit? So this is their second phase development, which is actually at the corner of 168th and Fort Streets. And this is when they would be required to build Cleveland Boulevard. They will be doing this single family residential up to the north, starting here this summer. And they will provide two roads that tie into 168th that go over to our boat ramp access, which is right about here. In working with the city, they would rather not see us build a road that's going to be torn out in approximately 2 years. We would like to not see that as well. So they have decided that they would accept temporary access through this neighborhood off of either Himbaugh or Hartman Avenue. And then Cleveland Boulevard will be built at some time in the future. The board did agree to a grading easement for this developer to do the grading work right now for Cleveland Boulevard, so it will... There's not going to be any disturbance to the park in the future. They're going to grade it right now, but they don't need to do the paving yet. So we are going to remove the paving of this access road from the construction contract and accept the access off of 168th for the interim condition. We're proposing to take that funding that we would have spent on that road and provide it to the city for the future construction of Cleveland Boulevard. Along with that, the trail that would go right along here from, this is the main dam right here. So the trail would come here and go up here into the boat ramp area right here. There's a segment of that trail that can't be constructed until the grading is done for Cleveland Boulevard. So again, we are proposing to remove that from the construction contract and hand that money to the city, who will then make sure that that trail is constructed prior to opening the park, which right now we're looking at spring of 2018. So we have an interlocal agreement addendum to our existing one that would provide a maximum amount to the city of $192,000 for the future construction of that trail segment and the access road in Cleveland Boulevard. And with that, I can answer any questions.
Let's get a motion on the floor, please.
Motion to approve.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Anyone in the public wish to speak to this item? Seeing none, directors. Director Thompson.
Did I hear you right that you want to like trade out money to build a road for the city? Can you explain that a little bit?
Okay.
We had a dirt road, and that's all we were going to pay for. You know, they want to build a beautiful road.
We were going to build a paved access road along here from Fort Street north to the boat ramp. That was always in the original plan. But we weren't, it wouldn't have curb and gutter, it wouldn't have storm sewer or anything like that. It doesn't meet a city road design standard because of the fact that we knew it was going to be a temporary access road. They allowed us to not do that. Rather than put that pavement down, which is about $135,000 to put that pavement in, the city has requested that we accept traffic on these two roads built by the developer until HWS Cleveland is constructed in the future.
Traffic on the road that we're not building?
No, on these roads in the neighborhood, in the new neighborhood.
That's the
neighborhood.
They're public roads.
Yeah. Can you
They're built by the SID.
Yeah.
But they're public roads.
They'd
be public roads anyway, so why would we have to accept traffic or not? Missing something.
No, we're accepting that they can access the park through those roads instead of the road we were going to build. That's what we're allowing them to do. If we stuck to the agreement,
they couldn't do that anyway.
Not us, and I don't until we agree to it.
Well, I mean, we agreed to provide this access road,
right?
And that was in the plans, and per the interlocal agreement, everybody had to agree on the plans. And now we're changing the plan to remove the access road that we were going to build.
We're switching locations, basically.
Yes.
Lori, will there be paving along what will be this HS Cleveland Boulevard to get them down to the boat ramp from the end of the SID paving?
Yes. Yes, we will. There will still be an access road to the boat ramp, which is right about here. There will be a paved access there that is still in the contract, and we're not proposing.
So there's a way to get from A to B on this thing.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you. Director Leahy.
Yes, I'm still stuck on the road and paying the city. They have an access. I mean, to me, the city's going to see savings if we don't build the road anyways, because they're just going to have to come in and tear up that slab of concrete to get it to the specifications that, you know, they require. So they're getting cost savings by us not doing this. I don't know why we have to pay them another $135,000 on top of it. The trail, I don't mind, because we are in sort of the business of trails. So I would like to see us, okay, give them the, is it $57,000 if I did the math right, for the trails,
right around there,
but not the $135,000 for the roads. And we can take that money and do more trail projects. I heard the conservation assessment or assistance program maybe could use some more money. So I'd like to make a motion that all else being the same except for the $135,000.
We have a motion on the floor right now, sir.
Amendment to the motion that we just give the $57,000 for the trail and not the $135,000 that we're going to pay, that we put that back in our coffers maybe for when we're going to have inevitable well, I won't get into what we're going to use that for, but.
Well, let's see if there's a second for this. Anyone who wants to second the motion? Once more, is there a second for this?
A second for further discussion.
All right. We're discussing the amendment. Mr. Winkler.
Does any other directors know? The issue is there. This is an interlocal agreement, so there's two parties to the agreement. So we can say, hey, we're only going to give you $57,000 for the trail, and they won't approve that, and they'll make us construct this. And then 2 years later, they will tear it out and they'll redo it. And so that's the danger that you will get into by not providing what you indicated in the interlocal agreement. So the city could just say, we're not interested. You build your access road.
So from
go ahead, Director Thompson.
So you're saying this government would look pretty stupid putting in a road that gets torn out again.
Well, I'm just saying that's
whether it's us or the city.
Yeah, well, either way,
it's a perception issue.
Yeah, right. But either way, they will accept it, but I'm going to say they're going to say no. You build the access road and we'll just access it like the original agreement and we'll spend the money and then they'll do it in 2 years and no one will be the wiser.
My tax dollars.
There you go.
You want to defend your motion, yeah, Director?
That'd be incredibly short-sighted by them, and I think if we talked it through at a staff-to-staff level, or even the board of directors level with their elected officials level, if we don't put in the road, that's going to save them the cost when they have to come build that road in 2 years. Mm-hmm. So I would think that they would say, yeah, okay. You know, they tried to get the $135,000. It didn't work out. Unfortunate for them. But if they are so upset about not getting $135,000 that they want to see us put in the slab, then I'm happy to air that out in public about why there's that slab of concrete out there and who's making those decisions. But we're doing them a favor by not building it. I mean, to me, that's the interlocal agreement part. I don't know why we have to give them $135,000 for a road, which that's not what we do. I mean, you tell me that $135,000 for more areas of the park feature, the dam site, or more trails, then I'm all ears.
Would you explain what the purpose of paving is for, Lori?
I'm sorry.
What was the purpose of the $135,000 worth of paving?
To access the site. I mean,
access the site.
For the south access area where the boat ramp is, a picnic shelter, the city would not accept a gravel or unfinished road.
And that needs, by contract, when are we obligated to have that in there?
By the time the park opens.
Be 18 then, you said, I believe.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Thank you. Marlon Peterman, please.
I think we need to be a little reasonable that we've sat down with city departments, planning, public works, and parks, and worked with them as a team through this whole process since 2009. You know, the city could say, not only do we not want you to pour this temporary pavement, they could be real sticky about it and say, we think you need to change the project and you build a boulevard with storm sewers all the way up to that access, and you spend over maybe $1 million more to do that and probably be within their rights to do so. Let's be reasonable here. What we've sat down with them and said, okay, if you'd accept letting people just come through the city streets that are to be built, we're not going to spend this money on the road, but why don't we provide that to the city to give them some encouragement to accept using these other routes, and we all look good in the process. We're saving money now, not wasting it, and since we aren't using it, contributing to them. We are partners here. We aren't adversaries. We're partners in this project. So let's act like partners.
If the board determines that that's, if the amendment that Director Leahy, I mean, we will take that back to the city and we'll take that back to the people that we work with. It would be incumbent upon the board members to work with the city council if it makes it to the city council and the mayor to advocate to pass, if that passes city council or not. But we can only work at the staff level.
and express what the board's wishes are. So, I mean, we'll do either what, however you want to do it, we'll do it, but we'll need some help with the council to lift if you wanted to cut that down. So,
Director Thompson.
Yeah, thank you for this potential of Dr. Susan LaFleche-Picot dam site and recreation area. Remember?
Yes.
Anyway, so the Picot Recreation Center, we're going to have access anyway from the south and through the subdivision. Anyone can get access, and please tell us that it's all within the right-of-way. It's public land. The developer is off on their own. They're going to do whatever the hell they want anyway. So that this done, the boat ramp and all that, that's just us and the city doing that. Is that correct?
Yes.
On our land that we're going to give to the city anyway.
Right. For,
all right. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Seeing none. Rhett, go ahead.
Well, just one more thing. You know, we just saw earlier where we, because directors weren't here, but we lost time and it cost us in the long run. And unraveling here, are we under, I know by October, are we in a time constraint now if we, even if we tried in good faith to do something right, is it going to unravel is my question. Because working with big cities sometimes gets that way.
Well, this has taken us a year and a half to get to this point with the city and, the, you know, with the developer and trying to figure out what their actual plans were to put in those streets. So, you know, if we have to go back to the drawing board.
Enough said.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm going to call a question, please. We have a motion
on the amendment.
A question on calling the vote on the amendment.
Leahy?
Yes.
Teaser?
No.
Thompson?
No.
Fred Conley?
No.
And John Conley?
No. Did you miss somebody? Don't we have five?
I
don't count very well. All right, but we're back to the base motion. Any comments before we vote on the base motion? Seeing none, roll call, please.
Teaser?
Yeah.
Thompson?
Yes.
Fred Conley?
Aye.
Leahy?
Yes.
And Chairperson?
Yes. Thank you, Laurie. Now we're on to item 11, Chalco Hills, the entry tower to this building.
Is this the
Randy Lee
tower we're building? No, it's this one right out here.
Good evening, Randy.
Good evening. Randy Lee, NRCS building manager. Before you tonight, seeking to get approval for the apparent low bidder for rehabilitation of the entry tower here at the building. Over the course of the last 3 years, we've taken on several remodeling projects in the building, and as some of you may not know, this building was built in 1987. We're embarking here on 30 years this November, the anniversary of this building. The tower in front is in dire need of some rehab. We've got thermal panes breaking in there. We have woodwork falling out of that facility. We have lackluster HVAC system inside there. Front doors are rusting out. So we've moved on to get a plan together to have that tower rehabilitated. Originally, the building was designed by Bar Vermeer Hacker, and we retained their services again to consult us on this tower and how we could move forward and come back with another model that'll work for another 30 years. We advertised this project on March 13th, the week of March 13th and the week of March 20th. Had a site showing here on March 17th, had four contractors attend that meeting. The architect's estimate for the rehabilitation was $97,500. On April 3rd, we had four bidders. The apparent low bidder was Elkhorn West Construction, $78,500. The high bidder in that bid opening was $173,000. Obviously, that brought some concerns to me, and called the contractor up and asked him if he had any red flags, anything that he had some concerns with. And Roger Slauson was with me. He is with BVH Architecture, and he is back here today if you have any questions for him. We had a conversation on the phone immediately after the bids, half an hour after the bids were open, and he seen no red flags. And so Roger and I requested a contractor's qualification statement from him, which he provided to me. And numerous jobs, City of Omaha, Omaha Airport Authority, public schools, Elkhorn Public Schools, many jobs they completed over the past. So we felt comfortable with that bid. And so moving forward, we felt like we could get this project completed, and they felt confident with their abilities to get that work done. Roger did provide me a letter of recommendation for this contractor. He has worked with them once in the past. And so tonight I'm here asking for your approval to award this contract to Elkhorn West Construction.
Thank you, staff recommendation.
We have a motion and a second. Anyone in the public wish to speak? Seeing none, I'm going to jump in with the first question. What? I lost track of it. You'll get old someday. Directors, go ahead.
Jim Thompson.
When are we ready? When I walked in today, I looked around. I mean, I didn't. It's not ran, so I didn't say at least 10 minutes. But you want to replace the windows with the curtain wall system, right?
That is the architect's recommendation.
Explain or show a picture of what a curtain wall system.
I don't have a picture of the curtain wall system, but what I will explain to you is what you'll typically find in a commercial setting building. The way the building was built before, there were I-beams that created the construction or the structure of that building. And if you walk out into that structure, it's all trimmed with oak wood all the way through the interior. The 6x6s you see in the four corners of that building, that structure will stay in place, the roof will stay in place, and we'll eliminate all that wood that was put inside. So it's really dropped the cost, I think, dramatically because of all the finish work. The wood that was put in there previously was all glued, it wasn't nailed, and so we've got those boards falling out of that building right now.
So can you explain what a curtain wall system is?
A curtain wall system,
windows in there. I've flipped houses. I know caulk is a wonderful thing to use the last 3 years. All right? You're asking us to spend $78,000 to fix up a space no one lives in. And you got the doors are rusty. Well, I walked in tonight, you guys painted them. Thank you, by the way. They needed a little painting. More importantly, and if you can answer this, can those existing doors be adapted for the handicap entrance, which you also called for?
Before you jump in, sir, would you identify yourself? Or
Roger Slauson from Barvermeer Hacker Architects.
Thank you.
An aluminum curtain wall system is it's a commercial product, basically. It's like an aluminum window system that you typically see in storefronts. It's not wood. It's all aluminum and glass. It's self-supporting. It'll attach back to the wood timber structure that's in place now. The one we specified is white in color to match the white window frames that are typical around the building now.
So what does it do? It gains efficiency, but they walk through that building. There's double doors. You know, I don't know what we're gaining on efficiency of the space as far as
the existing windows are at their point of failure. They were wood windows, and they've reached their lifetime span. The thermal seals on the windows are mostly broken. Condensation on the inside of the windows, which is leading to deterioration of the trim.
Repaired. I mean, if it were my house, I'd repair it. This is a taxpayer's house, so I'm kind of using the
same. I realize that.
And nothing against BVH, by the way. You do great work.
Thank you.
The structure's leaking has caused water to come inside the building into the front lobby area. It's getting back behind that flat roof. As you come in that front entryway, there's a flat roof that's in that space. And that water is coming down that wall now, that wall of windows. There's 32 windows, fellas, in that tower. And the three critical ones on the backside, that water's coming down that wall and coming in and seeping into the building. So we're seeing damage even inside the building now.
What are you going to replace for natural light? And look, when you put panels in, it's going to be pretty dark in there. How are you going to offset that?
The lighting is going to be improved from the low-pressure sodium lights that are in there now to an LED system. There's 8 lights. There's 4 that shine up and there's 4 that shine down. they're going to use the same connection points for those lights, but they'll be improved LED lighting.
And when do you plan to do the work?
We've got about a 4 to 6 week lead time for ordering the curtain wall system, which will be constructed by a company out of Papillion, Nebraska, Nelson and Sons. And they're telling us it's a 4 to 6 week lead time. We have asked them to be cognizant of the fact that we've got a 4th of July event out here, and their hope is to have this project completed before that event. It's in the front courtyard.
Great. Could you go over the doors, please?
The doors, I'm sorry. There is going to be handicap accessibility to that front door. There'll be a push button radio frequency button out front to activate that door for handicapped individuals. And then there'll also be a button inside that'll activate the interior door to get them inside the building also.
So I did not get an answer to my question whether existing doors can be adapted.
It'll be a new door that'll be adapted with
existing doors be adapted for handicapped.
They? They could. They could.
Yeah, it's the doors that are out there are steel. And the ones that will be going in and they'll replace are aluminum. So they should have a longer lifespan and not rust.
Did you have your hand up?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I just was wondering about now mold. I mean, you're saying there's water accumulating and going back now. You checked for that.
We are taking off the drywall that's on the inside to expose what's there, the wood structure and the insulation, and the plans call for the drywall to be replaced, the insulation to be replaced. And that's to investigate to make sure there is no mold inside the walls.
And then with the weakening of the window structures and so forth, there was a severe thunderstorm. Who does inhabit that place? I mean, workers or what have you? I mean, for the safety of them, what I'm concerned about.
No.
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
It's
an entryway.
It's our main entryway to the building.
Just people going in there.
Originally, when the building was designed in 1987 or built in 1996 or 1987, there was a theme to the building to have some agricultural feel, and thus that tower out front became a silo. Thus, the trellis system you see out back became a grain bin, if you will. That was BVH's task that the NRD asked them to design a building that had a rural feel, and thus we ended up with this tower with 32 windows in it. And so at this point it's failing, and it serves as our main entryway, and it's time to improve it and get handicap accessibility put in place and get it upgraded.
We've debated this for how many years now?
I brought it to the budget for 3 years in a row.
And we've looked at other options. We could take the tower down. I mean, that we looked at that. We could drywall it all, I guess, and enclose it and just make it dark with the light that's in there. So there's other options that we looked at. If the goal was to keep the initial architectural feel, that's what this is. Now, if you want to be redirected to come up with a more economical solution, I mean, it could be just all enclosed in wood and or siding and drywall and be done with it.
And
it could be for, it would probably still be 3/4 of that cost.
So, I mean, thank you. If you want us to do that, we can do that.
Thanks, Mr. Director Teaser.
I'm going to age myself here, but I was chair of the building committee that studied this and made a recommendation on the size and the on the structure. That was a controversial item, and it did eventually pass. The board at that time felt that, and you're absolutely right, it was represent a silo and have a rural effect. The item that was the most controversial was the putting of a wood roof on this building. And we opted to put a wood roof on this building, a shake shingle. And look what happened. A few years back, we had to tear it off because it was leaking, and we put a metal roof. And, it's just a matter of, guys, things wear out. And I support Randy's proposal, and I think it needs to be put back and put in good shape because we have a real nice building here.
Any other questions or comments? Roll call on the motion, please.
Thompson?
No.
Craig Conley?
Aye.
Leahy?
Yes.
Caesar?
Yes.
Chairperson?
Yes. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks.
Now, next item is item 12. We're going into cost share, urban cost share programs. Want to take a break? Yeah, let's do. It's been a long time. This is going to take a while. Then.
What, Eric, have to go to the bathroom or what?
Yeah.
No, I just thought.
let's take a 5 minute break. So we resume the programs, projects, and operations subcommittee meeting. We're now on agenda item 12A through 12F, and Eric Williams will be presenting. So go ahead, Eric.
It goes into.
Good evening, everyone. This is the collection of cost share program applications that we've received. There are six different programs that will be presented with a number of different projects each, and then we've got them listed as a vote on each program individually. The first program is the Urban Conservation Assistance Program. It's relatively small stormwater issues, small amounts of erosion, stabilization, those types of projects. First project is from the city of Bennington. And this is erosion around the base of the pedestrian bridge, which was part of a cost share trails assistance program application a few years ago, crossing from the south side over to the north side by the ball fields. And there's erosion down below the bottom of the retaining wall going down into the Big Papio Creek. It doesn't seem to have been related to the construction of the bridge, just that slope, like a lot of the other slopes in the entire watershed, is subject to erosion, and they need to go back and restabilize it to help make sure that there isn't potential damage to the retaining wall or to the bridge. The cost they've outlined is $78,502, and the maximum request in this program is $30,000, and so that's what's requested by the city of Bennington. Jerry, did you want to have discussion on each one?
Or let's go through and take the six or seven as a single motion.
Okay. The next project is from the city of Omaha in the area of 99th and Ida Street. This is a relatively small erosion repair project on the outlet side of a box culvert. Do you have the map on this one, Joe? As you scroll through, we can. Yep, so this is 190 pages. So.
Do you have page number?
I do not. It's the. Maybe three or four more pages. I'm sorry, my copy does not have page numbers this time. I should have printed that. There you go. So this pipe runs under Blair High Road and outlets on the north side. It runs up into Thomas Creek that the city of Omaha has identified as an area where they see a lot of erosion issues and they'd like to do more work. But right now, I think the next page, has some photos of the erosion occurring at the base of the billboard on the backside of, erosion at the base of a billboard footing at the backside of Tractor Supply Company. And they're asking for help to stabilize this and then potentially look at the outlet side of that culvert to make sure that this doesn't come back again. So again, it's estimated at $200,000 project, and the cost request is $30,000. The next one is from the city of Omaha. It's the West Papio Creek at L Street. If we can stick in the later part of the memo, we're just going to skip through the individual. Yeah, there we go. So maybe four or five pages after this. Yep, there you go. All right, so the trail runs under the bridge on the west side of the West Papio Creek, and they're having erosion from the area around the trail down and over the surface of the trail and down and around the back of the pier on the bridge. And so they want to restore the embankment on the creek side of the trail. And they're going to do that by putting in some little swales and then pipes to catch the water at the top of the hill, take it down under the trail and outlet it down to the creek on both the north side of Old L Street and the south side of Old L Street. And it would involve, I think, some repair on the trail there as well as the repair of the stabilization on the downhill side of the trail. Estimated cost is $118,500, and the request is $30,000. There are SIDs, as government agencies, are eligible to apply for cost share project assistance. And so SID 190 is Hickory Ridge, and they've requested assistance under this program as well. They'd like to stabilize kind of an outlet drain out of the SID and down toward the creek. They had previously done some work, and it has kind of collapsed. I think this was the original creek alignment and stabilization from when the industrial portion of this subdivision was developed. So there's erosion on both sides of the creek. There's some broken concrete down in the bottom, but it's not serving any function to stabilize the creek. So they want to go back in and restabilize those banks and then use FlexMat, which is kind of like a modular concrete carpet almost. You roll it out in a big roll, and then some grass can grow up through the bottom of it. It's easier than pouring concrete. So they want to use FlexMat to help stabilize the bottom of that, and then put another gabion basket at the top to help dissipate some of the energy coming down the channel. So it's on the outlet side of the pipe from the residential area down and into the industrial area. Cost estimate is $80,000, and the request is $30,000. SID 221 is Cedar Hollow. This project came out of a different cost share project that we had. Sarpy County had requested assistance in studying and coming up with an answer for the South Papio Creek next to 168th Street. While on a site visit for that project, we noticed that there was a culvert under the railroad, kind of at the southwest corner of this SID, that had eroded, and basically the bottom of that culvert had fallen out. Railroad was contacted. They didn't seem to think they needed to do any stabilization there. That's up to them to stabilize their own culvert. But on the outlet side, it then does get closer to, there's a fire hydrant out there, so, and there's a sanitary line. So there is some other public infrastructure that's threatened by the downcutting of this creek as this little tributary comes down to the level of where the South Papio is. So they're going to put in a couple steps of grade control and then reshape the banks to help prevent that creek from dropping any lower or widening out and threatening any of that other infrastructure between the railroad and where it meets the South Papio Creek. Again, $90,000 is the total expected cost, and $30,000 is the request. And then SID 225 is Giles Ridge. And this is a project that we had talked about previously. I think we had a board discussion on this item. It was a emergency repair on the South Papio itself with two SIDs, Sarpy County, City of Gretna. The south bank or right bank of the South Papio had collapsed and exposed the sanitary sewer line that runs from Gretna down and meets in with the Omaha Interceptor Sewer. So emergency work began. All of the parties agreed that the right answer is to restabilize this bank at about 2.5 to 1, reseed it, put some rock at the base. We knew that that meant that there would be a request for cost share after the project was already completed, but we had given them essentially our word that, yes, this is the right way for us to help fund this project. The district supports this stabilization effort, and we know that this needs to be done now, and then we would receive the cost share application later on a project that had been completed last fall. So this is the request for a project that that we worked on last year. $123,000 was the total. There are several parties involved, and our request was $30,000.
Can I interrupt? Can we get the maps and the application up on the screen? It just sort of gives me a better sense of what we're talking about here than the... Yep. I mean, we have a narrative.
Six total projects and a total of $180,000, and the recommendation is for $30,000 for each of those six projects, a total of $180,000 to be approved subject to funding in the FY 2018 budget.
Chair, to entertain a motion.
Move the staff recommendation.
We have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
We have a second. Any discussion? Anyone in the public wish to speak? Roll call on the motion, please.
Brett Conley?
Aye.
Leahy?
Yes.
Peter?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Chairperson?
Yes. Now move to the Urban Drainage Way Program, please.
The Urban Drainage Way Program is a little larger than the Urban Conservation Assistance Program. It still targets urban sections that have seen erosion, but in larger reaches. So recent projects include Hell Creek, where a concrete channel liner was removed. It's more of a longer linear project than a spot erosion issue. And the total dollar amount is usually higher on urban drainage way projects than on the urban conservation assistance projects. There were two applications in this program this year, one from the city of Omaha at 209th and Blondo. If you get the map, I think should be the next page. There you go. And so this is a storm sewer outlet. And as the storm sewer outlets going to the north, if you can go to the photos, the next page. A couple more. There you go. That's the storm pipe itself. And as it outlets, this happens in a number of places where a pipe outlets from a development, and then almost immediately you start seeing cutting through the existing channel because water has been concentrated from the roofs, gutters on the streets. And so that causes more erosion than the native farmland that was there. In this case, that erosion has cut. That's a sanitary line, a PVC sanitary line from that SID that has now been not only eroded on the top but undercut. They call that an aerial crossing if it's designed that way. This one was not. This one was designed to be buried. And so that is bordering on emergency repair need also. It looks like they've got a gabion basket there from where they tried to do some work earlier and it didn't hold up. So they need to go back and do some additional work here. There have been maybe four or five of these types of urban drainage way projects recently where a storm sewer outlet into a creek has eroded, and so the city of Omaha is working on a comprehensive plan to try and figure out what to do here. And in the interim, stabilization of times when this happens has been going on. There are three levels of cost share in the urban drainage way program. Level one is the highest percentage of cost share. That's 75%. That means extremely environmentally sensitive design, probably restoring a natural meandering channel using bioswales and other forms of environmentally sensitive stormwater management. Level two is 60% cost share, moderate levels of environmental design. And level three is 40% cost share. And that doesn't necessarily include significant amounts of environmental design. It can be just stabilization. Fleximat would be an appropriate type of stabilization in this case for the level three. Level one and level two projects require application to the Environmental Trust and the 319 funding to determine whether or not they're eligible for other sources of environmentally based stormwater management funding. Level three does not require those two applications. So this project is applying at level three. The estimate is $300,000 and the cost share request then is $120,000. The next project is from the South Sioux City. Let's see if we got I think there's a map. There we go. Okay, so from South Sioux City, this is kind of south and east of the urban portion. It's currently operating as kind of a field drainage way that had been stabilized in the past with a concrete lined channel to help get water from the urban portion on 29th Street down to the Missouri River. At this point, there are plans to upgrade the area around on both the north and the south this channel, and so the concrete lined farm drain function is no longer appropriate. So they're looking to make that into a real amenity as things happen around the area there, a very naturally based stormwater channel, kind of the same concept as the mall in downtown Omaha, not a lake per se, but a natural stream that people would want to be next to, would have paths and would be a feature rather than just kind of the open drain version that a concrete line channel performs. So this is a significant upgrade in the environmental sensitivity of this channel. There was previous work in this area, Marlon, urban drainage way.
Putting in that line channel.
Yeah, and so since we had previously worked with them to achieve this function 15 years ago, 20 years ago?
10 years ago.
10 years ago. At the time, that was the appropriate design and appropriate construction for that location. Now that the use type around the area is changing, We're recommending level 2 cost share. The applications asked for level 1 cost share, but it wasn't quite as comprehensive of an environmental application as we'd like to see. It's a pretty straight channel. And so we're recommending level 2, and that's the 60% cost share rather than the 75%. They did apply to the Environmental Trust for funding, and they were not approved there. And 319 funding is not available in this area, so they did meet all of the other steps. We talked to them last year and requested that they specifically apply to NET and look at 319. They came back this year and said, we did all of those things. Here's the application now. So we're recommending level 2 cost share, not level 1 that they had requested. So those were the only two applications for this program. The recommendation is to approve the Omaha application for $120,000 and the South Sioux City application for $447,480. And we have communicated with South Sioux City that we're recommending a change from the application that they submitted, and they understand that. And so the recommendation is for $567,480 be approved for these two projects included in the 2018 budget.
Chair, to entertain a motion.
Who's staff recommendation?
We have a motion. Is there a second, please?
Second.
Director Thompson. Any public discussion on the item? Directors?
I had a question.
Yes, go ahead.
Is this a typical amount of money that we spend each year for the urban drainage?
In the memo, just above the table under each item is a list of the amount that was budgeted in the previous year. Mm-hmm. So this is a little less than we've spent in the urban drainageway program in the past. We had a few large projects specifically with the city of Omaha over the last few years. I think they're looking at a few additional projects in the future. But last year's allocation for this program was $1,072,153. And so we're quite a bit less in this particular program. But in the overall of all of the urban conservation assistance, I'm sorry, urban cost share programs, the total dollar amount is roughly the same as the total cost for all of the programs in previous years. So we saw more applications in other areas and less in the urban drainageway this year.
Is it typical that you screen these before they get to the subcommittees?
Yes. Marlon and I worked through them all. There were three projects that were submitted that were deemed ineligible based on being routine maintenance that is not an eligible cost, and they were in different areas.
So in your estimation, these meet all the requirements of what we're doing here.
Okay. Director Thompson, did you have your hand up?
The Hell Creek, since we already approved that, it'll show up in the budget for approval. We don't have to approve it again.
Correct, and we have an interlocal on that one, so we're only requesting approval on projects that have not previously been approved.
Thank you.
At this time.
I'm having heartburn over this South Sioux City one. That's for future development. That's a setting up for development of a new area to open it up with increased runoff, apparently. And this is part of developing a project. And why aren't they responsible for improving the drainage for their own project?
We're not aware of the negotiations between the city and the developer in this area. But the cross sections on that project, if you can skip back to that portion. I would expect that the city had offered, it's a couple more pages down. I would expect that the city, there you go. Okay, so you can see a cross section there. That's it. The city has probably offered as part of their contribution to development of public infrastructure to build the roads on each side and to upgrade the stormwater channel to be appropriate for the new use type. And so this is the city's portion of infrastructure construction. Different cities handle that differently. Bonded funding, SIDs, all that kind of stuff. My expectation is that South Sioux City has discussed with this developer and said they would provide some portion of this, and then the developer would do the private portion of the private streets. But
I'm going to oppose this. I don't see it's our function to support development projects of this type. But any other comments or questions? Roll call on the motion, please.
Leahy?
Yes.
Teaser?
No.
Thompson?
Yes.
Fred Conley?
Aye.
And Chairperson?
No. 3 ayes, 2 noes?
Yes.
The item passes. Okay. We get another shot Thursday.
Okay.
Now we're moving into recreation area development.
Yep. And this is to support recreation facilities. So that includes structures as well as other features in recreation areas. In this one in particular, we've got a couple that are listed as trail related, and that's because they are not connected to the trail system per se, but are more designed to be a destination recreation trail at a natural resources type park location. And so the application is in the Recreation Area Development Program as opposed to the Trails Assistance Program. And we had a couple of those this year. The first application is from Bennington at Logman Park. I'm not sure how to pronounce that. They have... Logman. Okay. on the right, you can see they've got several baseball fields, and you can see the bridge from the Trails Assistance Program and the trail on the south side of the creek that was previously constructed. When we had the ribbon cutting for the trail project, we walked across the bridge and to the left or the west on this map and over to the southeast corner of this location, and they announced that they were moving forward with plans to receive a donation of this land and make it into additional park features. And so if you go to the next page, maybe, there's kind of a concept map that was on a poster at a... there's the existing... I think that's part from the Parks Master Plan. So they're continuing to develop more parks in this area along the water. Maybe one more page. There you go. So you can see they've got a couple more ball fields, soccer fields, and then I believe the trail that connects to the other baseball fields will also connect, if you scroll down just a little bit, the south side down there at the bottom, kind of along the creek. They're in kind of a conceptual phase right now. We haven't seen full plans on this one. But it's essentially more recreation areas down next to the creek and next to the other recreation areas that they've previously developed. During the trail ribbon cutting, there were hundreds of people there. I think they had some kind of a little kids baseball and softball tournament going on. So it's a very heavily used facility, and the residents of Bennington are very much appreciate all of the work that goes on here. The estimated cost is $203,950, and the maximum request in this program is $50,000, and that's what's requested for this project. California Walking Trail from the City of Blair. This one is not connected to any other trails, but it's along the Missouri River. And if you can just pull up, it's just three pages. I think the third page should be the map. There you go. You can see it's a trail along the surface of a gravel, what is currently a gravel maintenance road, essentially. And they're going to put some additional chip limestone on top of that to make that into a riverfront trail. And this is an area where the district has worked before, and so it's connecting from the facilities on the south side up along the river to the north. It's a relatively inexpensive project because they're just adding more chip limestone to the surface of a gravel-topped maintenance road to make it into to give it a new use. The project cost is $26,000, and the request is $13,000. Next is Lyons Park from the City of Blair. And they have existing restroom facilities at the park, and they are going to construct new restroom facilities. Currently, the facilities are not year-round. They are not heated. They have no hot water. I don't know if it might be a latrine system currently, but they're upgrading to a year-round, vastly improved facility. So we evaluated this one and determined it's not a maintenance type of item. It is an upgraded and new type of facility, not just a maintenance on an existing facility. The expected cost for the upgraded restroom or replaced restroom facility is $180,000. And again, the cost share maximum is $50,000, and that's what's requested. The next project is called Sustainable Spaces. It's from the City of Omaha. That's the title that they've given it. It's at 3101 Florence Boulevard. So in North Omaha, it's a currently abandoned lot. The city planning department has been working on this location to make kind of a pocket park or an area where local residents can come outside. There'll be a little trail through the lot and then native plants, some stormwater features. There's a couple photos. There's a map of the entire area. It's focused on sustainable urban stormwater management. This is a photo of the existing area, so it's basically just an empty lot now, and it will be upgraded to include features that aren't currently really available. So it's going from a vacant lot to a park with a lot of that natural resources focus that is very hard to find in this neighborhood. There aren't very many natural resources areas, and so they're very excited about getting this one moving forward. Total cost is relatively low at $33,210, and the cost share request is $16,210. So a little less than the 50% max because they received another grant. The Fontenelle Park Lagoon, there's a lot of work going on in what was formerly the golf course, and it's being upgraded to a more of a public open park. The lagoon itself is receiving a lot of work, including lake dredging, which was part of a cost share in the current fiscal year to deepen the lake and make it into a fishing habitat. They were doing work on the surface of the lake. The cost share for the dredging is only on the bottom portion of the lake to make it deep enough that fish would be able to live in there. So this is now recreation facilities at the top to match with the fish habitat that's been created. So it'll be little piers that reach out into the lake to provide fishing access into the lake. If you go one more page, there's a map that shows the, there you go. It shows the different fishing access points around the lake and the upgraded comprehensive natural resources work that's going on here. So stormwater management of all kinds, similar to what's happening at Adams Park, and then additional trail features. So a significant amount of work going into this park as well. The estimated cost for this portion for the fishing access points is $78,000, and the request is $39,000.
Question on this one, Eric. They have vastly expanded the size of this lagoon. Is that because of water coming in from the CSO project?
There is CSO work going on here, and we discussed this during the cost share application last year for the lake dredging, that they were working on the top several feet. The original plan was to just leave the bottom where it was, meaning it would not be particularly deep. The CSO portion is above the normal pool of the lagoon, and so in a rain event, it would rise up, but there would be no change at the depth of the lake. So the lake dredging was to dredge down deeper, I think 3 or 4 feet. I believe they added even another 2 feet because they got a good price on the dredging to make that deep enough that fish could overwinter and it would become more of a recreation facility rather than just the stormwater facility. So that was the cost share application last year. Now they're continuing that work and they're bringing other recreation facilities to the outside of the lake to go along with that work.
Thank you.
In a very similar fashion, the next project is Hanscom Park, and this is improvements throughout the park, including some local trail features. And there you can see this is very similar to the Fontenelle. It's a CSO Green Solutions project. So that work is going on down by the lagoon. They are doing a similar thing to Fontenelle, where they're working on stormwater storage in the upper portion, water quality through the little channels that drain down to the lagoon. And this is a local trail and some picnic improvements at Hanscom Park. This is one of the oldest parks in the city from the late 1800s. I'm not sure exactly when, but it, they'd like to make some upgrades. So again, trail connectivity between different facilities and then adding new facilities, the picnic area. And that's the request here in the recreation development program portion. The total cost of the recreation facilities from the planning department here is $254,395, and the request is $50,000.
Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Yes, go ahead.
The next category is Trails Assistance Program. Why is this $50,000 up there in the recreation?
So this is not, this is a local specific type of trail. Again, as we talked about with the other one, it doesn't necessarily connect to a more comprehensive trails network. You could exit the south side, take the bike lanes on 32nd Ave, or follow Woolworth and go west to get down to the Field Club Trail. This has also got some picnic improvements and other non-trail related components, but it's mostly a destination recreation facility.
So the $50,000 is gonna, I mean, you've got the orange mat, which is not part of this dollar, the where are we at, the 254? I guess explain to me what portion of this is...
Everything that's colored, essentially, except the lagoon, is included here. So this includes all of the trail work that they would be doing and all of the picnic area improvements and the playground work. So all of that is part of the recreation facilities that they've outlined in this application. And if they had applied for this under the Trails program, there is no dollar cap on that portion. It's just 50% of the total cost. And so they would probably be entitled to more funding there. It would be a, they'd have to itemize out just the trail portion. So it's kind of a toss-up as to how much the total cost share would be. But
there's a couple more projects I'll talk about when you get to them.
Okay. So that's how they submitted this one, and they they chose to go for all of the stuff and capped at $50,000. Next is Halleck Park from the city of Papillion. This is another trail type project. It is adjacent to the West Papio Trail. So you can see the creek running from the left across the center of the map, from the west to the east, and the West Papio Trail is right there. This is a trail that is not directly connected to the West Papio Trail. It's a walking trail within the park around some of the other features, the arboretum. They've got trees in that area. And so this is, locally specific destination trail type of project, not a connectivity creek adjacent type of trail. So it's a recreation area request. Their estimate for the total cost is $300,000, and the request here is $50,000. So similar to the last one, if they had requested under the trails program, the request could be up to $150,000. So the fact that they've decided to go this way means the request is lower than it would have been if they had requested based on trails program.
But wasn't there like a grandstand or something that somebody made somewhere?
Sumter. That's next to Walnut Creek.
Yeah. Moved out of town by Walnut Creek.
Yeah.
Okay, now, does any raid go through there?
Papillion days when I was a Boy Scout went on 84th Street. I don't know if it still does.
Yeah, it does.
Okay.
Well, what I'm getting at, okay, so, well.
You were there last year.
here's the thing, and I don't know if this means much to anybody. I don't know if it's a stretch, but when they have these parades, they have a cutoff date of who can enter. And one side knows that cutoff date, and they all get to be in that parade. Another side does not know about that cutoff date, and they're never allowed in that parade. And if we put public money in that, and they don't allow that other side in the parade, I'm going to bring that up. I'm just going to let everybody know that now. If, but maybe I'm reaching here. But
it's not the other side.
It's not on the parade.
The other side of what?
You're reaching so far.
I know. But
the other side of what are you talking about?
Larry, it's not on the parade route.
Okay. I'll explain later, Mr. Chairman. Sorry.
Okay, so the total expected is $300,000. The request is $50,000. One second here. Next is from South Sioux City, the Orchard Education Center. And they've got some very nice renderings. There's a couple pages from their master plan, which is a requirement is to have a parks master plan to apply for recreation area cost share. They've got some quite detailed architectural drawings for a kind of a small small education building. If you can pull up one of the renderings, the colorful ones. A couple more pages. There you go. Can you zoom out on that one? So it's a two-story building adjacent to their orchard. And if you go to the next page, I think, shows the inside. It's a very natural design style. It will be closed in. This is a cutaway. So it's a kind of a classroom on the second story that overlooks the orchard area of their park, and they spend a lot of work in a couple different park areas. So this is ongoing effort towards an area that they've worked on in the past. And then it's got some skylights, and so it would have they say observatory. I don't know if they intend to have some kind of astronomical observatory stuff going on there also, but they certainly have. Significant amount of planning done on this one, more than we've seen on a lot of other projects. The total expected cost for the building is $61,858. I think this is to be constructed by city staff, and we've talked with local jurisdictions about this, that staff time is not a reimbursable expense under cost share projects, but this is for the material cost outside of the staff time that would be used to construct the facility. That's my understanding of the project as it is now. So you can see a breakdown of all of the costs for the materials that are listed, and that's included, I believe, in your packet. Maybe one more page. There you go. So it shows the breakdown of the cost, and so I guess they've done an internal design on this project, and they intend to build it themselves. That's my understanding. South Sioux City brings very creative applications to our programs. This is one of the more creative applications we've seen. It's a, but I will be very excited to go up and see it when it's done. So the total cost is expected at $61,858. They had listed their request as $20,000. I believe they misread the application and thought it was capped at $20,000. We recommended a correction on their application to the 50% of the total cost, so $30,929. And we let them know that we recommended that change to their application dollar amount. And then last is the City of Valley. And they don't often submit cost share applications, so we were glad to receive one. This is for camper pads and electrical connections at their park to allow more RVs and encourage more people to come to the park and be engaged. They currently have kind of an open field, a kind of hashed area with the, I guess, red markings. And they would put RV pads there with electrical hookups to encourage overnight visitors to stay at the park. There's a couple. There's a photo on the next page, I believe. There you go. So that shows the area. It's currently just grass, but they would put camper pads in there with electrical hookups.
Was that camping and RV?
RV specifically, yes. So it would be pads, asphalt-based pads with electrical connections for 240-volt, 50-amp RV connections.
Okay, camping pads, per se, tent camping.
It's not pad. It's just for the RV function. The dollar amount is relatively low, $14,450. So only $7,225 is the request. So that's the total of the requests in this program. So from your question earlier, Director Japp, there were more projects and more dollars requested in this program this year than in previous years. It was $52,500 last year on only two projects. This year, nine projects, I believe, and $306,364. The recommendation is for those nine projects at the listed dollar amounts to be listed in the FY 2018 budget.
Chair, to entertain a motion.
Staff recommendation.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Any public discussion?
I appreciate the gentleman on the end discussing the possible options.
Thank you for your comment.
Yeah, motion.
Director Leahy.
Note that Blair and California Trail. How close? They may look pretty close to the Missouri River. Is there like a railing, or is it level with the Missouri? Is it going to flood out?
I'm going to ask Marlon because we've done work here in the past that I'm not familiar with.
Let me explain that a little bit. This is the California Bend Missouri River Corridor project area that we did with the Corps of Engineers about 15 years ago. We created some habitat in there and put some chutes just north of their boat ramp that they have. And so there's about 500 acres in there. And there's been discussions kind of with Blair that they it's really just a habitat area now. And that maybe someday they would like to maybe bring some passive recreation up in the area, maybe for fishing, that sort of thing. And so that's what this is. And you will actually be receiving probably within the next 2 months an interlocal agreement with them to allow them to build these trails and use that area as a recreation. So this kind of came in before that, but they're just planning a little gravel trail and up kind of where we have a little maintenance road, and it's right along the banks of a chute. It's not really the banks of the river, it's the banks of a chute that is next.
Is there going to be some signage, or first off, does it connect to the boat ramp?
It does. And so it starts right down at the boat ramp off of this parking area, yeah. And then it go up along some interpretive signing.
Or just, hey, there's a walking trail, nature trail, you know, while you're waiting for, you know, your dad to boat up the boat and stuff, and you don't want to help, so you want to go take a walk or whatever.
And the other thing, the reason they hadn't pursued it for this more is they wanted to get their own trail system out to the area from downtown, and they've now completed that. Yeah. And so they see it as something, you know, get on downtown, come out there,
And then a question about signs, like in particular the building at the South Sioux City. Do we get some kind of signage that says, hey, Pat, you want to do something with Hanscom Park? That's a pretty big one.
Yep.
The Fontenelle docks. I would like to make sure that we are getting credit for the role, sometimes up to 50% that we're playing on these projects. So I just want to make sure that, back to that one trail real fast. So where's that compared to the level of the river, though?
The
trail.
This trail. Oh, it's up on the high bank, so it's pretty high.
Yeah. But is it too close for, like, I mean, you know, when you're biking, you just, see you later. I'm going to go swimming now.
There's places it's only, you know, and again, it's a chute. This isn't the main
river. But,
you know, there's a few places it's within.
Yeah, will there be
50 feet away? So it's.
Will there be like a safety rail? I just worry about someone going off.
There's a lot of trees there.
Oh, perfect.
And so it'll be kind of through a wooded area.
That'll stop.
That'll slow down, Amy. Just that, Patrick, all of our and the other directors, all of our agreements that we have, they require signage if we give money to them.
So there's an operation and maintenance agreement that they take over responsibility ongoing, don't ask for additional assistance, and that they put up a sign on the project.
Okay, so we have a motion on the floor to approve these total expenditures up to $306,364. Roll call on the motion, please.
Tom, I have just one quick question. We budgeted $52,500 for this, and this comes out of $306,000. Where does the money come
from? That was the request last year, though. That it wasn't. It was what we budgeted
it's
last
not
year.
Firm.
No, and also for the new directors especially, these are all subject to the budget. So you can approve them, but ultimately, if we don't have the money in the budget, then we make decisions on what we need to cut. So these ultimately could be cut in the final budget, but you're just kind of saying, hey, they meet the qualifications. We think it's a good project. We're going to submit it.
So it's not in concrete that we have to call this much.
No, point. No.
Do they know that?
Yes.
And yeah, they are informed of that.
In fact, if they have multiple applications, we ask them to prioritize what they would like to see funded. In case we do have to cut, then we know what is their number one project. And we go.
If there are other constraints, we have asked for other things in the past, like spreading out Hell Creek over 3 years rather than doing $900,000 in the urban drainage project in 1 year. We asked for an interlocal and did $300,000 in 3 years. And so this year, the total amount for all of the projects comes to relatively similar to the total amount for all of the projects in previous years.
Right. A little less, actually.
Yeah, a little less.
Okay, we're ready for the roll call on the motion, please.
Yeah.
Teaser?
Yeah.
Thompson?
Yes.
Fred Conley?
Hi.
Leahy?
Yes.
And
Chairperson? Yes. Now moving into the Trails Assistance Program.
This is Trails Assistance Program. It's pretty self-explanatory. 50%, there is no cap on the expenditure on our side. We haven't had to tell anyone they're asking for too much money on that yet, but so the total district portion could be up to 50% of the total cost. The first one is Fontenelle Park, which we discussed earlier, and they're putting in a walking path around the lake. So similar to trails, destination-based trails being in the recreation program, this one could probably have gone either way. I would guess that Omaha believed that an application of the recreation program for the fishing area would not make them eligible for a second recreation-based application for the trail portion. But even if they had combined all of the features like was done with Hanscom, the total cost share would be relatively similar. Both programs are up to 50%, and the total cost share would be still about the same amount. So listing under trails or recreation is about the same. Get the next page.
A question on that photograph there. That lake looks considerably smaller in area than the one we saw in an earlier picture.
It's probably not the scale.
Oh, it was a lot more than that. Look at the back up one more.
It's not evaporation.
So it really they are, went down to Pratt Street in the previous picture.
I don't think there's this scale. That other one was a drawing, I think, more than a map.
Okay.
Yeah. It was just.
Yeah, I think it's a scale issue. Yeah. So it's a much closer zoom here. And they are extending the water quality portion of the lake to the south significantly with those little weir structures for some wetland area. So the lake shape is changing with the construction through the area.
Thank you.
The trail portion is around the lake and to the south. The total expected cost is $69,000, and the request is $34,500. One second.
Is there going to be any kind of lighting around that trail at night?
I don't know. I didn't see that listed in the application. I mean, I'm sure they'll have just normal park lighting. Usually those go off at like 11 or so.
I'd have a short brief proposal. There could be, in high school, we worked with solar and wind, hydroelectric power, small powerful power station. Maybe it could be a small solar panel, power, very high military grade, free style flashlight.
Well, thank you for that idea.
Just to follow up, we do use solar-based LED lighting at recreation areas. We have that at Prairie Queen, and I believe that would be done at 15A as well. So that is a feature that's being used in recreation areas around here, and it may be planned here, but it wasn't listed in the application. The next recommended project is Turner Boulevard, well, what we're calling Turner Boulevard Trail on Pacific Street. This is the last piece of a series of projects. This one would connect from the bottom of the hill at Field Club Trail on the south side of Pacific Street up to the top of the hill, the southwest corner of 36th Street. Northeast corner of 36th and Pacific is where Turner Boulevard Trail starts as a side path for two blocks and then moves down into the park. So this would mean that starting down at the Keystone Trail, taking South Omaha Trail, phase one, phase two, joining to Field Club Trail, taking the Pacific Street section here, getting on Turner, going through Midtown Crossing, going up 30th Street, down Burt Street, and all the way to Creighton University. So a series of projects have connected from south of Interstate 80 through Midtown up to east of 480, making recreation-based connections possible that were not possible before. This is the very last piece of this series of projects that's been in process for a long time. This would be above the back of curb and in a green space outside of the fence on the golf course there on land that Douglas County owns. And they're working on with the city on clearing the right-of-way for the land land use there. We had previously budgeted some funding to help with the design work on this trail. The city of Omaha alerted us that they were moving forward with the design and would rather request cost share on just the construction portion. They would do the design themselves. So the $30,000 that we had budgeted for design in the current fiscal year will not be expended. Instead, the total cost of this project for the construction portion is $167,224. They've asked for $83,612.
If I might add, this was designed about 12 years ago. So they just dusted off and updated the sheets. But if you don't see it on the map here, but when the the Field Club Trail terminates at Leavenworth Street, it doesn't go anywhere. And the original plan will run up Leavenworth Street on a bike. Totally absurd. So this does, as Eric mentioned, and I've got it by Burt Street. The steam pipes been fit at Creighton, so is that trail now functional?
I think so. They're doing dental school work over there. So.
Yeah, but this connection gets anyone on the South Omaha Trail up downtown on 16th Street with this connection. Now, it's too steep for federal funding, so I'm glad to see this one finally get done.
If you want to ride from the Field Club Trail to the Turner Boulevard Trail, you're going to need your low gear. I think it's 10% up the hill. So.
Right where that proposed trail sign is, right in the middle, right underneath that is a 25 million gallon water reservoir.
Oh, that's down on Woolworth.
36 and Woolworth. Isn't that Woolworth there?
Yeah.
That's specific.
That's specific.
That's specific.
Oh, it's on Woolworth. I'm at the wrong end of this thing. Okay.
Further south.
The next project is the West Papio Trail, Bent Creek Park. And there's erosion from the West Papio Creek, and it's encroaching on the trail. You can see it's about 4 or 5 feet away from the trail. Omaha had a similar issue with West Papio a little further north because that's an unmaintained channel section, so erosion occurs. The trail was probably constructed a little closer than it should have been, but they are going to. The first step here is to move the trail back. You can see the erosion. If you skip to the next page, there's some photos. One more, maybe. Oh, sorry. Okay. Well, there's a manhole over there. Go back up one page, then we'll look at the aerial version again. There's a manhole just to the left, right by the erosion spot, down and left. And so they've indicated that they will probably be coming back to stabilize this section of West Papio Creek, but the first step is to get the trail back. The next step is they will have to stabilize because the sanitary sewer runs down there. And so Omaha will have to protect the sanitary sewer from erosion from the West Papio Creek moving over. So there will not be any further trail relocation needed because they'll have to protect the sanitary. It's a much bigger asset than the trail. So,
What in Blondo is that again? Say Blondo, but
160th?
168th.
Right.
Blondo.
Yeah.
So, it's this section is on the West Papio Trail, but it's following the north branch of the West Papio Creek, going basically straight north and pointed at Dam Site 15A, which we'll get to in a second. So the expected cost here is $37,465, and the request is half of that, $18,732. Ashford Hollow North is an SID there. They are building a trail to connect from the Rainier Parkway, which is a connection to the West Papio Trail. So we had previously authorized use of district right-of-way for this connection. So I think you've reviewed that in the past. The trail follows the east side of 42nd Street there in the yellow, and then also follows the south side of Rainier Parkway to the west over to 48th Street. To connect to 48th Street going north and over West Papio Creek again. So it's a connection between a couple different trails. Southeast from here is the Marv Holobar Trail, which goes under 370. So again, this is a filling in a gap in the trail system that previously people could not get between two different trails, and now they can. The expected cost is $187,500. This request is from Sarpy County, and so I think they are... providing, it's a collaboration with the SID here, and so Sarpy County filed the request. I think they will then be constructing the trail, and the request to Sarpy County is $93,750. SID 506, the name on this one is different from the cover of the application form. They said 471. I think 506 is actually the SID that would be applying, not Quail Run, but Quail Run Valley, and this one is also along the north branch of the West Papio Creek, if you get the map. This one we actually encourage them to apply for because the West Papio Trail currently has two breaks between where we were earlier with the Blondo Street connection, and the north edge of this map is Fort Street. The north side of Fort Street is Dam Site 15A directly, and the windy section through the middle is HWS Cleveland. We encourage the SID to apply for cost share to complete this trail so that the trail is continuous for a little ways under 168th, but now it will connect all the way up, meet at HWS Cleveland, cross into the park. Eventually, when Fort Street is reconstructed, there will be an underpass put in, so you won't have to cross on a widened Fort Street, but this will connect the West Papio Trail into Dam Site 15A and the trail on HWS Cleveland that Lori's been working on. We encourage them to do this because we know that as soon as the recreation area opens, even though we aren't responsible for it, people will start calling us and the city of Omaha asking how to get there. And so we ask the SID to apply for this. They were required by their SID agreement to construct this. For some reason, 12 years has gone by, they have not built it. So the city is appreciative of us encouraging them to get this done and using our assistance funding to encourage them to move forward on a project that they otherwise have dragged their feet on completing. So this will be a good asset adjacent to the recreation area that we're currently building. The estimated cost here is $800,000, and that includes a bridge over the creek on the south side from SID 471 on the left over to SID 506 on the right. That's an estimated $200,000 cost, so that bridge is a large portion of the overall cost. But $800,000 is the expected cost here for the trail and bridge and a couple connections, and the request is $400,000. This is a good project that the city has wanted to see for a long time. We've wanted to see for a long time. It connects a lot of other assets and gets right up to 15A, which has been kind of the destination target of the West Papio Trail for a long time, at kind of the top end there. So it's great that the SID is now willing to move forward and get this done. The next project is from South Sioux City, the AutoCAD Trail. This one has federal funding, and so the dollar amount you can see on the estimated cost is $563,000. The cost share request is only $56,000. This was from the old days when there was 80-20 funding available for trails, and then we would split the local cost 10% and 10% with these local jurisdictions. So this project has been around for a while. They're finally moving forward with construction. And you can see a map. It's a connection from this whole residential area over and connected to another existing trail. So it's good to see this moving forward. Federal aid projects take a very long time, and it's good to get this one checked off the list. Our contribution is relatively low percentage of the total project, only 10% rather than 50% of a lot of the projects we're seeing now. So the request is $56,356. And the last one is from the city of Takema, what they call the Tiger Loop Trail. This one is also federal funding with a slightly different agreement on the funding source. The federal funding is capped at $250,000. So the remaining portion is divided 30 evenly between us and Takema. The trail loops around a couple different fields and up by the creek. It's a pretty good project. They, again, asked us last year if it was the right time to apply. They were still working through some federal paperwork. We said, no, hold off and apply next year. Here they are now. And again, getting a federal aid project finally completed is a good accomplishment, particularly for a small city like Takema. The total cost, $322,821, and the request is only $36,410. So good to see another small city making a request to these urban programs. And that's the last trail project.
Move to staff recommendation.
Is there a second?
Second.
Anyone in the public wish to speak? Being none, roll call on the motion, please.
Directors?
Oh, yes, Director.
Were there any applications that didn't get recommended here to the subcommittee, either because of cost or because the application didn't check all the boxes? Yep.
There was one from the city of Omaha on the Keystone Trail for a retaining wall. They have a timber retaining wall. There was a story on the news about 2 weeks ago of city council funding that. So two things. It's normal maintenance. The retaining wall was constructed originally and is now needs to be repaired. They did one of those last year also. They upgraded the timber retaining wall to a stone or concrete block retaining wall. They're doing the same thing. We informed them last Friday that that's a maintenance item. That's not a new feature, so they need to be responsible for that, and they understand that. So we are not recommending the maintenance on the retaining wall in this program.
That was the only one?
Yes.
Right. And then did I understand you correctly where the SID 506 was responsible contractually in the original contract for that trail?
True, and the catch here, and I think Parks learned a lesson on this one, there's no timeline.
Okay.
So they are supposed to build it sometime, but they don't have to build it any time. And so,
I understand that. That's a huge price tag for us to be coming 50% to the table on something that they signed on the dotted line that they would have to do. Now, they may have said, well, we have to do this. We can go get some help from the NRD. That's fine. So I'm going to think on this one a little bit more before Thursday. Maybe I don't mind matching them 25%, saving $200,000, because I think we can find something to benefit trails, a project that we could do for another $200,000, including certain signage thing that I know I've talked to staff about. So I'm sure it's a great trail. I'm sure city wants to see it done. We want to see it done. The residents do. But, I mean, that SID is on the hook for that. I do want to help them out. But 50% for something that they wrote in their contracts, that's $400,000, quite a bit for that.
Is that, and forgive me if I wasn't paying too much attention, but that SID 506, is that Omaha or is that?
It's a Douglas County SID not yet part of Omaha.
Yeah. Well, is it going to become part of it? You brought up annexation. Is it going to be annexed?
Sure. In the future, it will be at some point. We don't know what the annexation package will be at any given year. And I don't think we've seen any examples where the SID agreement required a trail to be constructed. They moved to annexation, and they had to find out the legality of whether or not the city would enforce them constructing the trail. A couple locations where that's true. This is one of the two. So if we get this one done, hopefully the other one will follow suit and build their trail, and West Papua will be complete.
Director Thompson.
Yeah, I'd like to remind Director Fahey that we're approving the project come budget time when we kick in on the actual dollars. That's when perhaps you'll thought a little bit more about it. But keep in mind, too, that once this project goes, if they delay it another 5-10 years, the price is going to be double. So I'm glad to see it going in. And finally, I think General Manager Winkler sent the email, was that today, about Omaha being beating out Denver and someone else?
It was a couple of days ago. We were
number
ranked
one
city nine
with our trails.
Number nine.
Yeah. We're ahead of Denver, though. Number nine.
Okay, we're number nine. And we're 120 miles now, off the top of your head, Eric, with the addition of these, assuming they get funded and all that sort of thing. How many miles of trails do we have?
It's more than that.
I think it's been more. Yeah,
probably closer to 140, I would guess.
140. Okay. We'll take 160 when we're done. How's that?
You got another one, Patrick? Yeah, just to address that, I get we're going to get another shot at these, but I do think sometimes, and we've done this before, is to not lead SIDs along like they're going to get the funding. Sometimes we do cut them at this point, or we shoot them down at this point, just so they aren't thinking that they're going to get it, and then come September, that's when we cut them. And as far as, I'd love to expand our trails. I'm a big trail supporter, but there are a whole host of maintenance issues with a lot of our trails that sometimes maybe it's not wise to keep on expanding, but to circle the wagons and start to fix and take care of some things that are already in place, including signs.
Good comment. Any other comments? Did I cut you off, Eric?
No.
We have a motion on the floor. Yes. Roll call, please.
Thompson?
Yes.
Eric Conley?
Aye.
Leahy?
Yes.
Heiser?
Yeah.
Jefferson?
Yes. Go ahead with the lake bridging program, please.
Lake bridging, two applications, 50% up to $100,000 for this program, and self-explanatory, it's to dredge out lakes. Hanscom Park, as we talked about earlier, this is similar to the Fontenelle Park application from last year. It is a CSO Green Solution location. The dredging is to increase the depth of the lake. It has no impact on the overall stormwater capacity of the lake for the CSO function, but it does mean that the lake would improve water quality and it would become a better habitat. So without the dredging, it's unlikely they'd be able to have a fishing location. With dredging, they would be able to make it into a fishing location. And the application here this one's from the Parks Department. They're working closely with Public Works on this one. We talked to both of them on Friday. Now, the application dollar amount is listed incorrectly on the form. We updated that on Friday afternoon after talking to them both. The request or the estimated cost is listed correctly in the back of the packet at $198,775. And the request then is 50% of that, $99,387. For the dredging portion only of the lake, and that's dredging the bottom of the lake. No impact on the stormwater function on the top. The other one is for West Bay Woods. This is SID 439. And it took me a little while to figure this out. It was before my time, but this is ZB4, which was not constructed by the district, but is a water quality basin for Zirinsky. So it flows lower left to upper right out and then outlets into Lake Zirinsky. There was previous work done on lake dredging here, and so the request is less than the maximum amount here, because in 2011 they began dredging. They stopped work. We reimbursed them for a portion of that. They'd now like to finish the dredging that they had done in the past. So the total expected cost is $147,000, and the request here is just $50,000. Again, decreased because we had contributed to previous dredging work here, less than the 50% cap for this program. And there are only two applications in this program. So the recommendation is for both of them to be approved. The total, $149,387 included in the budget for 2018.
I'd like to make the recommendation that we approve just the SID 439 project.
Is there a second? At this point, we don't have a motion to do anything. Anybody wish to make a motion on either one of these?
I'll move a staff recommendation.
Is there a second?
Second.
We have a second. Any discussion on the motion? Director Leahy.
How, if you're going to make the lake deeper and you dredge it, does it not add to CSO capacity? I mean, you're getting it bigger, right?
No, the water surface remains the same. So the outlet is designed to keep the water surface at a particular level. The upper banks outside of the lake are changed for the stormwater management function. So the depth of the lake doesn't have any impact in the additional capacity during a storm event. So the lake could be 3 inches deep. They could still raise it 4 feet in a large storm event. The lake could be deep or increased in depth down to 8 feet deep, so you could have fish in there. And again, it still wouldn't have any impact in the outlet elevation or the maximum surface elevation during a storm.
Okay. Director Thompson.
Yeah. Did they tell you when it was dredged last? I think it's about 20 years ago.
I didn't see that in the application.
Yeah, it was dry bones for a while, and they did it to clean it out. To turn it into a fishing lake is a joke. I mean, yeah, there's kids down there fishing now and then. I don't know, maybe they catch a little sunfish. I don't know. But I think the rationale to make it into a fishing, year-round fishery, how deep would they have to make that thing? Because it's only about 3 feet deep all the way around.
Usually try to get 10.
8 to 10. Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of dirt coming out. And it's, you know, they talked about that at neighborhood meetings, about it being part of the CSO project. Through the hills on the north side of that, but I think it's a head fake to think it's going to be a fishing lake. That's why I didn't want to approve it.
All right, Director Bradley,
and forgive me, but it was probably a battle for the full board Thursday. But Director Thompson, I remember when I was elementary, junior high, and I used to fish at Hanscom Park, and for me as an inner city kid who couldn't get to Minnesota, Lake of the Ozarks, or anything like that, Merritt Reservoir, Hanscom Park was a very good place, even if you got bullhead, and all they stock it was bullhead. So I would want to double check with Nebraska Game and Parks and make sure they're going to stock more than just bullhead. But still, I mean, for the inner city kid that can't get to these places, and even, you know, for the grown-ups, you know, I guess this would be more bigger argument for Thursday if motion passes.
Okay, any other questions, comments?
Regarding the fisheries, the application does specifically indicate depth of the lake, and then the grading plan will be designed to achieve target percentages below as recommended. The Nebraska Game and Parks Commission, adequate depth for fish stocking purposes. So they have already discussed this with Game and Parks, and that's on page 2 of the application form there. They talk a little bit about the depth and how that relates to fishing in the lake.
Thank you. We have a motion on the floor. Director Teaser.
One last comment. You know, you worry about the depth of this lake, but I'm guiding muskies on the West Path.
I knew you could resist that one. Good point. Good point.
Okay. Roll call, please.
Brian Conley?
Aye.
Lady?
Yes.
Caesar?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Jefferson?
Yes.
There is a sixth program this time, and this program is generally administered by Amanda. This application came in originally, and they had submitted cover letters for both urban drainageway and flood mitigation assistance. This is from Douglas County in the area of Elk City, which is not actually incorporated. I believe it was at one time, and it deincorporated in the 50s or something. 225th Street, north by Highway 36. There's a collection of houses and a few local businesses that do not, and it's the very, very top of the watershed, and there is no stormwater management facility of any kind there. So during large rain events over the last couple of years, they end up with pooled water. Everybody brings out their own pump and literally pumps water back from one side of the street to the other on each other's property. Douglas County would like to help them come up with a more permanent answer than just running pumps and shooting water on each other's lawns. And so there were a couple different solutions proposed. There are four different sets of engineering information in here. We indicated to Douglas County that the Urban Drainage Program does not, or the Flood Mitigation Assistance Program, neither of those provide assistance for stormwater in pipes. So Douglas County will now recommend to the local residents they use open ditches on both sides of 225th Street with culverts at each of the driveway crossings, drain the water to the south and then east into the watershed, west into the Elkhorn River, to keep it out of the lawns and out of the basements, because anytime it rains, it pools and saturates in through the groundwater into the basements of the houses. We suggested to them that they use the Flood Mitigation Assistance Program rather than the Urban Drainage Way Program. That seemed like a better fit because it's not really a drainage way per se, it's just kind of a road ditch. But the main function that Douglas County is trying to solve is keeping water off of the surface of the non-finished road. It's a gravel road, and so the road does become impassable during large rain events, and so it's a localized flooding consideration, totally different than what we usually see under flooding assistance programs. Total cost is expected to be $126,854, and the Flood Mitigation Assistance Program is up to 50%, $63,427. So the recommendation is for this one project, and Douglas County will go back and talk to the residents about coming up with the local share of the money to see this move forward.
Okay, Chair, to entertain a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Any public discussion on it? Directors? Director Peaser.
I have a little heartache with this one. There's a bar there in town, and when it rains, there's water puddling in front of the bar. That's where this whole thing came up from. And honest to God, it's I have heartache on this. I think it's kind of a waste of money. Hell, they're the highest point in the Western Douglas County.
And we talked with Douglas County about that, it's a weird drainage situation because they're sitting basically on top of the hill, but they didn't ever come up with a way to send water off the top of the hill. The hill isn't a point, it's a little flat area, so the water just kind of sits in front of all of the local businesses. I think there's a restaurant also,
yeah,
and a few scrap metal facilities.
Director Thompson.
My heart is not that, other than unless they put bullheads in that water. But it sounds like they don't have a plan, but we're just giving them some money so they can plan if we give them the money. That sounds a little weird.
Douglas County has talked to the residents. They had a public meeting. They talked about four different options. They indicated they would request a cost share. We talked with them a couple different times about which program to use. We are recommending the cost share under the Flood Mitigation Program. They would then take back this cost share, indicate that the other $63,000 would need to come from the local residents, and the solution would be the open road ditch with culvert crossings. So this is kind of a back and forth version of they talk to the locals, they come up with a couple different proposals, they bring one to us, we indicate which one we think is best, they go back and say, now you need to meet the rest of the cost. So
it's a Could be more, but we're only going to get them, if, assuming it goes through the budget process, which won't happen until July and September. Maybe then they might have an actual call, but it's not going to change their figure.
Yeah, they expect to have another public meeting with all the residents to talk about this, and they'll know one way or the other. So if the residents say, absolutely not, we're not putting in any money, Douglas County would then say, well, then you don't have a project, and this
we don't fund it.
Be removed.
Douglas County putting in the money?
Douglas County is going to, they're going to ask the local residents, because this is a very locally important project. It doesn't impact greater infrastructure.
So they would not put any dollars in there, just us?
They're going to discuss with the residents the funding plan. And we don't know what it is. They might say, we'll do 50-50 with you. They haven't gone to that next public meeting yet and say how they're going to come up with a local share of the funding. But we generally don't evaluate where the local funding comes from on these. It's just that this is the maximum we can contribute. The local partner is responsible to find it. If they want to get it from the residents who are directly impacted, that's one way that they can fund the project.
Are you ready to vote on this one? Roll call on the motion, please.
Lady?
Yes.
Caesar?
No.
Thompson?
No.
Fred Conley?
Aye.
And Chairperson?
No.
Motion fails. 3-A, 2-A.
Okay. Now, I think that concludes item 12, doesn't it? Finally?
Yes.
Okay. I want to comment that we put a lot of money into these various things tonight, and we've got a lot of wants, and we've got bigger needs other places, so I hope we come in with some sharp pencils and put a little money away for things we really need to do. There's a lot of wants here. End of the lecture. We're going to talk about B-cycles.
Yes, and... Ben Turner has been very dedicated and is going to join me for this last item very late in the evening.
Would you introduce yourself, please, for the record?
Whose idea was it to put him on 13 and 12?
I keep it real short, despite what you may have heard in the past. My name is Ben Turner. I'm the executive director of Heartland Bike Share. I have a very short presentation. I understand it's standing between you guys and the end of this, so we'll go through real fast. Heartland Bike Share... It's a 501c3 nonprofit located here in Omaha. Our mission is to operate regional bike share programs. We currently operate a program in the Omaha metro area. And those who are closely following the local news will know there's an article in the Journal Star yesterday about Lincoln Bike Sharing, which we've also are the proposed operator of. So we can go to the next slide. Great.
Great.
All right, so we're a bike sharing program. We have 180 B-cycles, 33 stations located throughout Council Bluffs and Omaha. To use the system, you need to purchase a pass. Once you have a pass, you can check out a bike as many times as you like, from any station to any other station. Unlimited checkouts. We have three pass types, a monthly pass, annual pass, and a daily pass. Checkouts longer than an hour incur additional charges. Here's a map of our stations. We are we have about six stations in Dundee, Exarden Village, seven stations now, with one at College of St. Mary. We have one in North Omaha, one in Midtown, 18 to 20 stations in downtown Omaha, and we had four stations in downtown Council Bluffs. Right now we have two. We've been growing consistently since 2011. We started out with five stations. Again, we have 33 now. And as such, our ridership has been increasing. You can see the change in rates between these two. And what it means is we're building habits for people. So people are riding more often. More people are riding more often. So it's pretty good. Today, for instance, when I last checked, we had about 70 trips. So we're really increasing our use. We have some data on who is riding. The reality is it's mostly people from the metro area. We serve some visitors. We serve a variety of diverse and at-risk populations. Notably, 40% of our trips are replacing physical inactivity, so people would otherwise be doing nothing. And about 56% of our users have a BMI of 25 or above, which is considered overweight or obese, essentially an at-risk population. So we're doing those. About 50% of people make purchases at proximate businesses, and then 35% of our trips are replacing motorized modes. Our big move, our news locally, we've been had a CRL expansion underway for a bit now. We're getting closer and closer all the time. We have it's a $1.1 million project in two grants, federal congestion mitigation and air quality dollars, and then Nebraska Environmental Trust is the match on that. So we'll be locating stations along the BRT corridor, along the MedCenter campus, Blackstone District, Metro Community College. On this map, the blue dots are existing stations, and then the red dots are proposed locations. So we think we're going to add a bare minimum of 36 stations and 150 bikes, and depending on how everything prices out, we may be able to add up to 42, maybe more stations, and maybe 160 bikes. So we have two functions. We have a transportation function, allow people to get from work to school, park once, drive around, but we also have a strong recreational component as well. Our recreational component really helps fund our transportation purpose. So this is a picture of the Bob Carey Pedestrian Bridge, where our most popular station is, and we help activate recreational spaces. So this was before, this is the after. The lack of five porta potties makes this look more appealing as well. But for the most part, this has been a really strong addition to this, giving people something who've walked here to ride a bike across the bridge, ride back to the old market, wherever they've come from. So our vision to move forward, we have this plan sort of for the urban core, but we also have this plan for the recreational facilities around the area. So San Antonio B-Cycle is the model, and as Eric and I have been working on this, I have been talking about this for 2.5 years, and I've never been to San Antonio. I was literally there last weekend at a wedding, 2 weekends ago. I got a chance to ride along the Mission Trail, and it is spectacular. I don't know what your San Antonio experience is, but it's incredible. And so they have this recreational facility, and along the way they have historic sites and playgrounds and parks and all sorts of things, and they have B-cycle stations at all of them. And it's a really successful model, and it's something that we would look to replicate in the outer areas of the Omaha metro area. These are some of the sites that we've talked about in the past. We are currently working on one here, and then one in downtown Papillion or on the Papillion City Park, and we're working with the city of Papillion on that, and would be looking to install that station at the same time as the station here.
So from the list of recreation areas on the last page, a lot of those will look familiar, so we have constructed a bunch of those, and a lot of them are also connected by the West Papio Creek and Trail system. So I spend a lot of time on trails related to the West Papio Creek. We've done a couple segments since I've been here in the last couple years, and a lot of Zirinsky, Walnut Creek, Warspan through 144th Street. All of these are connected to 15A, are all connected to the West Papio Creek. And so this proposed station here and the proposed station in Papillion are functionally both connected to the West Papio Creek and represent kind of the first two that could connect together through future final pieces of the West Papio Trail. The station here is also a destination recreation-based facility. So as was mentioned down in San Antonio, people could come to the lake, jump on a B-cycle, ride around the 7 Mile Trail here at the lake, potentially take the connector over to 144th Street Trail, maybe into Millard and back. But this would be the first station kind of on the west set of stations. Papillion coming along at the same time makes it seem like this is something that's catching on and more people are going to be interested in. So this is something we budgeted for this year. The expense is over $30,000, and so we're bringing the purchase for board approval. The request is for $35,540 per a quote that we had. It is possible that cost will come down a little bit based on some changes that have happened over the last week or so. And then also authorization for the general manager to sign an operations agreement with Heartland B-Cycle for operation of the station here. And they take on responsibility for any of the users and any of the operations and maintenance needed for both the station and the bikes. So we're asking for both the funding and then the approval for the agreement.
Chair to entertain a motion.
Move a staff recommendation.
We have a second. Anyone in the public wish to speak? Seeing none, directors?
I have a question. How long is the agreement for then?
The operations agreement is 1 year and could be updated annually and would move to month if we decided we needed some different things. We've talked about this already and with legal counsel about how that's going to go, but we're going to finalize some of those details from the draft version that was included in the memo.
I see a hand down this way. Director Thompson.
And I want to remind you the bikes should be walked across the South Carey Bridge.
Fair enough.
It's a rule. It's a rule.
We actually see it and we're concerned that that we need to make them. So we've actually reduced the gears on our bikes so people can ride more easily across the bridge. But we'll work on that.
I see another question down there.
Where's the bike manufacturer?
Okay, so we're our vendor is Trek Bicycle Company, which is a company out of Madison, Wisconsin. The bikes themselves are manufactured in China. The stations themselves are made in Louisville, Colorado.
Just a question. I've seen them down in San Antonio, by the way. That's where I first saw them. And very, very cool. My question is, when you are trying to get from point A to point B to drop off the bike, how do you know those slots aren't full?
Yeah, so we have mostly our app. That's the best way to check. The information is publicly available online, so our website, our app, and then there's an API available, so there's a bunch of third-party apps as well that show that information. If you were to arrive at a spot and the station was full, there are some options on the screen. There you can select additional time to get to the next station. And we have very accommodating customer service policy. So if you were really in a bind, you would call us and we would offer you a solution to your problem to essentially secure the bike and ensure that you weren't overly inconvenienced.
Okay, thank you.
I'd like to ask a couple questions about your proposal here. Apparently there's a lot of federal money in this. And why are we being asked to fund as much as we are when there's a lot of federal money out there?
So the federal funding portion he talked about, the $1.1 million, is to the city of Omaha to operate, and their agreement is a little bit different.
So it's specifically within one block of a bus stop within the metro area in Omaha.
And we are not any of those things, unfortunately, here.
Then the second question is, why is this called initial costs? Are we expected to have subsequent costs on this thing? At underneath the total there at the outside the box areas.
Oh yeah, on the quote page.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I essentially we pay B-Cycle an ongoing fee, a quarterly fee for service for the things that we get from them, and so this quote comes through us as part of our normal agreement from them, and so the initial cost is essentially the cost of purchasing the equipment. And then, there's an associated ongoing cost with on us as well.
What would be our additional cost beyond the $35,000 you're asking for?
So that was one of the details we're still working on finalizing. The cost. There's a cost per space in the dock. Do you want to highlight that?
Yeah, so we pay for every dock in our system, we pay about $100 a year as our service fee. And so essentially... Eric and I have discussed a few different things, but the ongoing cost would be, I think to be determined.
Yeah. So the maximum cost there would be 11 spaces times $100. So something like up to $1,100, but then there's the $5 for the fun pass or something.
Yeah. So we have a variety of different operating agreements, right? We've had one with our previous equipment owner. We currently own our own equipment. We're working on one with the city of Omaha and the city of Lincoln. In this particular case, we would collect the fees at the station, and that would go to offset the cost that the station generated itself, including maintenance, operations, whatever the ongoing licensing fees would be.
This looks like it's a little open-ended right now to be going ahead to authorize something and we don't know what the costs are.
So the maximum ongoing operation cost to us would be $1,100.
Well, and I believe in the budget year, what we've talked about is there would be no ongoing.
Yeah, sorry. So for the initial purchase and installation of the station would also include the costs for all of our upcoming FY 2018. So
that's not what I'm asking.
Right. So during as the agreement indicates, it's renewed annually, and so during 2018, we'll find out how many people are using the station and what percentage of the cost is generated through the revenue, and so we'll have a better idea of what the future cost of ongoing operations would be starting in 2019. But the maximum cost, if there was no revenue coming in, we assume none of that, then roughly $1,100 operation cost would be the following year.
But that would have to come back in another agreement to this board.
Correct.
So if you determine that you didn't want to pay that, then you just end the agreement.
And I've got a question on maintenance too. What happens to who maintains the bikes?
Yeah, so we maintain the bikes. You know, we have a staff that are essentially experts in this, and we have a station at the Wabash Trailhead. So we're working on sort of becoming excellent at operating trail-based bike share. And so, you know, we would send a person out once a week, once every other week, essentially what we figure out we need to air up the tires, check the crank arms, check the brakes, check the chains, make sure everything's in working order. And then we would receive reports from customers if there were problems. We would come out and deal with it accordingly.
Okay. Any other questions or comments?
How's the liability work on this?
Anyway? Yeah, absolutely. So we today is actually our insurance renewal day. So I signed all the agreements for that this afternoon. We carry seven different types of insurance. Premium's about $16,000 a year. As the operator, our users sign an agreement assuming liability. And then we, with our station hosts, sign essentially an agreement where we assume the responsibility for providing the insurance for the station.
Eric, I'm sure we run that by our own legal counsel.
Yeah, we talked about that a little bit earlier. The attachment version that we have is somewhat of a... Brent, do you want to answer that a little better than I had?
Yeah, I mean, the attachment is an outline of the agreement that hasn't finalized, but some of these things...
Because, you get a bike that's not functioning properly. And
couldn't they just hold us harmless or the city harmless?
I would suggest an indemnification.
Right. Yeah. You just about have to have that, because if you don't have that, anybody can sue anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And it's just a headache. So at least this way, if it makes that circle, it's going to go back around. And you just say, well, here it is. It's yours.
Yeah. And that's our standard operating. And we've been through this, you know, dozens of times to make sure that we carry the insurance we need to essentially satisfy folks like you and the station hosts.
Well, can you, Director Connolly was talking about, you know, the open-ended. Can you give us a plan and close it and just say, okay, this is what we want. This is all you're going to have to spend. You know, here's the insurance, everything, you know, cross the T's, dot the I's, and then we can, at least we'll know what we're talking about.
And I think that $1,100 number we're talking about is that.
Okay.
So we talked about the timing on this. There are other upgrades at Chaco Hills that are going on, including the asphalt trail behind the building being upgraded to concrete. We are attempting to coordinate the pouring of the slab underneath the station at the same time as the concrete trail upgrade and the end of the parking lot, which Randy is working on. But Randy and I have been talking about this for a few months, so as soon as the weather is nice enough, Randy will be replacing the trail in time for summer events out here, and we would like to pour the concrete for the slab at the same time to help save cost and logistics hassle. So that's why we've got this here now, and some of the details are being finalized with legal counsel. We would like to move forward with the first step is pour the slab, place the order. There's some lead time on getting the station here. That's why we're doing this right now. So that, you know, I think in about 2 weeks, we're going to do the concrete trail section. We'd really like to get the base underneath the B-cycle station completed at the same time. We expect that will help us save quite a bit of money in the cost of the concrete for that, for the base of the station. So that's the timing is in about the next 2 weeks, the base concrete would be poured. And then in the end of May, the station would be delivered and placed next to the trail, between the parking lot and the trail next to the rain garden over to the west side of the building here.
So I have a question.
Go ahead, Frank.
So when will we have a final agreement?
Well, that's right.
I guess legal counsel, do you have, I mean, how long do you think finalizing an agreement would take here so that we'd have something ready for John to sign?
I can type it up tomorrow, but they're going to have to look at it. Two parties.
I think we plan to have it in 2 weeks before we pour the trail, before we pour the pad.
Right.
And we can have a quick turnaround on our time. We have two lawyers on our board just to do stuff like this.
We can see how much we can get done before Thursday. At least finalize the details, that way we can be directed to make those changes.
Okay. I've got a question regarding the bicycles that we're paying for here. If your operation ceases to exist, what do we own?
We're not buying the bike. Nothing.
They were in the first version.
Yeah, I believe bikes are in.
Sorry, so if
$947 a piece.
Yeah, if you went away, we have the station and the bikes.
Yeah, I mean, I think if we go away, there's still a bike share system that you guys are a part of for the, you know, in part of the community. And I think someone steps in and saves us if we go away. But I lose my job, definitely.
But we own the station and the bikes.
Yes. Yeah. Well,
the bikes move from station to station. They're not, that serial numbered bike is not ours. We're paying for the privilege of having a station here, I guess. And it includes a bike, which may end up in downtown Omaha.
Right. And so that specific bike may end up in downtown Omaha. Yeah. We would have level of service. So if you guys are buying 7 bikes, we're keeping 7 bikes here.
Well, do we own the stations then?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I believe that's what we're talking about.
And 7 bikes.
Yes.
Might not be the same 7 bikes you get initially, but 7 bikes.
So it says 11 bikes or whatever.
The station can hold up to 11 bikes. The quote indicated 8.
You're not going to be able to keep traveling.
Right. So no. 8 of the bikes would be associated with the station.
And with purchase comes branding on the bikes. So these bikes would say Papio NRD on them. So we would have some sense of where they are and could return them if that was a priority.
How do you keep somebody from stealing?
Can I call the question? Can I call the question?
Let's bring this to a close.
We
have a motion.
Question's been called.
Roll call.
We have a motion second.
Yes, we have a motion second.
Thompson?
Yes.
Fred Conley?
Aye.
Leahy?
Yes.
And Chairperson?
No.
Motion passes. 3-18.
Okay. That should complete our agenda for tonight.
Should be interesting.